Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's time for another podcast that's completely unnecessary. You know, I regret giving it that name now because it's so many syllables and 25% of the time I screw up saying it. For Wednesday, September 9th, 2015, the afternoon edition of the CU podcast.
Yes.
The sunny edition alongside Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. We have a soiree. I screwed up not the title of the podcast, but saying soiree.
A soiree is a party. A smorgasbord?
A smorgasbord.
Of topics? Is that what we're...
I mean, I think it's a party of topics, too.
It's a party of topics. Talking is it an adventuring party or just a...
It's an action RPG. Yeah. Would you be a wizard and I'd be like a paladin, you think, if we were in a party?
Probably like a thief or a rogue.
You're not quick enough to be a thief, I don't think.
I can roll dice that say otherwise.
Okay. What are we talking about? We'll be following up that GameStop Chrono Trigger debacle with the guy being sent basically a fake counterfeit game with Madden inside. Phantom Pain microtransactions. Oh, Metal Gear's out. ET carts raising a lot of money out of New Mexico. The final tally off of eBay sales. Follow up on the Analog NT. Remember that? The Federal Trade Commission coming down on Machinima Network on YouTube. Jimmy Kimmel pisses off the Legion of Gamers. Resident Evil Origins announced. Mega Man movie might be coming from Fox. Ubisoft theme park. What the hell is that? Steven Spielberg predicting superhero movies might be going the way of Westerns. And your Q&A. Ian's going to the gym.
Yep.
He's gymming it.
We talked about that last time. And I'm still doing it, so...
I don't know what else is going on in your life.
Well, I'm back to follow up on that thief and rogue thing. I'm back at this weird period where I'm just reading all these rule books just for the fuck of it because it's fun. So I've been doing that. And I've been working a lot lately. It's been like it was like a 2 week straight sort of deal. It's been a weird month.
But so. You head off today, right?
Yeah, which is why we're doing a strange afternoon edition of the podcast because
you know what? I'm going to go on record and say I like it. I think it's going to be a better one.
I think at 5 minutes in, that's a pretty big...
That's bold.
That's a bold statement to make.
I need a win just because I'm trying to maneuver the Mario right there on this. I need a win because my hard drive's failing. So the last 3 days I've been trying to back up like 7 years of videos. Or actually 5 years because for some reason I have another hard drive that has like... It's like 2008, 2009 are on this one hard drive. Then another hard drive has 2010, 2011 for some reason. I don't know why. And then 2012 to present on this... 2 terabyte hard drive, but it's starting to fail, and I never had a hard drive fail. And so if you're out there and if you have a hard drive issues or the partition's gone or you want to recover it, it's like it's called it's like Test Disk 7.0. it's free, open source, and it's outstanding. From what I've seen, it's like really good. Otherwise you have to pay probably $100 or more or go send your hard drive to some data place, and they probably use software like this in order to get data. It's been backing up my data, and this isn't advertising it for money, but it was able to access the files even though the hard drive wasn't being fully recognized by Windows itself. But this program still was able to get into the files, so it's fairly powerful for what it is. And like I said, it's free, and you can even like recover if you already deleted it. You can pull it out. I know there's software that does that, but this is just a little bit more powerful by the guy who wrote it. I think is in this sort of business or whatever. So that's what's been going on. So that's been terrible. But the book's proofread, most of it. The video game review sections. So if you're not sure what it means to proofread 760-plus game reviews, it's making sure everything's proofread. And vocab is all matches up. Make sure there's a dash between power and up for power-ups. You know, stuff like that. Obviously, grammar, run-on sentences, making sure consistent use of punctuation. But then also, you know, Pat's got to double-check all the... You know, most of the developers are double-checked, not all of them. But
did you just refer to yourself in the third person?
Yes, because Pat did a lot of work on this book, and it's still not done yet. And, like, just, you know, I did beef up some reviews. I went back and played Zen Intergalactic Ninja today. That was one of the, probably the first 10 or 20 I wrote for this godforsaken book. And I shortchanged it. I felt bad, went back in, you know, played it for, like, 45 minutes, and, you know, Zen went up in the book. For you Zen Intergalactic Ninja fans out there, all 20 of you, I gave it a decent review. Gave it 3.5 stars, you know. And then...
Spoiler alert.
Pre-orders might be sometime in October, I'm just going to say. That's what I'm leaning towards. So hopefully it shifts before the end of the year because people are asking me on Twitter. And, you know, it's hard to gauge because I have to finish putting it together while I do these other projects on the side. And then I have Portland. I have Retropalooza I'm going to be going to. I have this podcast thing that I have to put out because I got to eat. Patreon stuff. And so anyway, that's all I'm going to whine about. My finger's still broken, but it's getting better. If I was a smart person, I wouldn't go to the gym while I have a broken finger and not lift stuff. But I'm stupid. Speaking of stupidity, we're going to follow up on... not want to say controversial, but for some reason, when we brought up the fact that there was a guy who ordered Chrono Trigger from GameStop, put up a YouTube video, and then it showed clearly a fake label. Like, even from his turn-the-wrong-way cell phone camera, you can see it was a fake label.
Yeah.
And inside was Madden 95. So, someone brought into GameStop in either New York area or Louisiana a fake counterfeit Chrono Trigger, and then mailed it to this guy without checking to see it was the wrong game. So he followed up via email to me because he thanked us for posting the news about it. And then we got so much conspiracy theorists saying, oh, this guy did it to get a free game. Why do you trust him? Which is funny because why would you trust GameStop?
Right. The thing that's funniest to me is these people who are so quick to rush to the massive corporation's aid. This has nothing to do with, you know, you don't even have to think that corporations are inherently evil, but you have a massive corporation that is getting back into something that they don't really know anything about anymore, and mistakes are made. I don't see how this is not a believable situation.
Yeah, and we never said it was malicious from GameStop, dudes. We just said someone dropped the ball.
Yeah, they weren't doing what they said they were doing. And the thing I wanted to point out, a lot of people's, like, I don't know if they're younger or if they're just not thinking, but, you know, GameStop came from Babbage's and Software, etc., okay? These are companies that sold cartridge-based games, and you know what? Shit like this happened when they sold cartridge-based games. You'd get a game with the wrong game in it. People would swap something out for something more desirable. Mm-hmm. It happened at rental stores all the fucking time. People would rent a Contra and take, like, a bases loaded and remove the chip and put it in and return the game. And it's just, like, it's not... It's so far well within the believable spectrum of things that could occur, it's mind-blowing that people are, like, the first thing people think, well, some people are thinking, is that this guy's trying to get one over on GameStop.
So some people are thinking, like, well, he ordered a real Chrono Trigger, was sent a real Chrono Trigger, which, again, if you look at the video, it's a fake label, you can tell.
Yes.
So then he got out a Madden board, put it back in, to send it back. So then you're saying he then had a fake one made himself? To do this trick to get a it's just the most convoluted. I hate to say it, it's borderline idiotic. Well, to think that this guy would go through this. Plus, because you are openly admitting to some sort of fraudulent activity, and then if GameStop kept records, they can say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! We have records that are signed here that this was tested at this date."
Right.
And plus, there's some mail fraud that could be involved. If you try to do something like this, the risk involved of opening yourself up to people looking in on you over an $80 or $90 game to try to fake it is absolutely insane to me. To think that you would go through that to do it, first of all.
And just like every insane theory, they don't realize that oftentimes the simplest answer is the answer. You know what happened? A guy saw GameStop, or a girl saw GameStop, opening up retro trade-ins and said, you know what? I can fuck them over real easy on this. Printed out a bullshit label, slapped it on a Madden for some trade-in credit, got some PS4 game or whatever he wanted.
Got a $40 credit or whatever.
And walked out the door. I mean, it's easy.
It's the most reasonable answer. Or the other theory that he was... it's hard to keep track of all the different theories. It is like the moon landing. You got to keep changing the theory. So the other theory...
Keep poking those bad dudes.
So the other theory is that it could have been that... it was never sent, and it was all fake. Well, he emailed me, actually. This guy emailed me.
Right.
And if this was a fake, it was a damn good one. Besides, he had the shipping form. He had the invoice in the box. But he also then sent me, I guess, a close-up of the scan barcode on the bag, where it says, like, you know, at GameStop, you know, had the barcode. Could he have faked that? Yes, he could have. It would have been some decent effort to fake that, too.
But at this point, how much effort are you going to put into faking a bunch of materials and fabricating a story
for $80?
For a free game.
For literally $80 to $90 value of a game.
I'm not going to say that $80...
You're wasting... Your time isn't that valuable
right.
if this is how you're spending it.
Yes, $80 is not no amount of money, but if someone out there can see going out and buying a new game for full price and then picking up dinner on the way home, there's your $80. It's not like we're talking an unreasonable sum of money. Now, and I'm not saying that people would go through this effort for a more expensive game, but for an $80 game, it's an insane amount of effort.
So this is what ended up happening. And the details were that after some finagling going back and forth with GameStop, he sent it back. He had to pay, I think, his own shipping and a small restocking fee in the email.
They're supposed to pay his shipping, but they never sent him a label, and he said that he was not going to be able to get it back in time.
You had a 7-day window to get it back to him. Otherwise, then, you know, you're out of luck, and you had to pay your own shipping, because they do that sometimes. They do that when like RMAs.
I think it was just a return policy in general. But I mean, whatever.
So the guy actually ended up losing money on a game that was false. But fortunately, he was a member of a game forum, and a nice guy actually sent him a copy of the game. After seeing him go through that.
Beat up, but nice gesture, too. I think it was with a box.
Yeah. Oh, that was part of the conspiracy. That guy is an idiot for sending him something. It was a fake ruse that the guy put over on everyone. Just relax, people. Just relax. GameStop screwed up. It's not the first time it could have happened.
Did they check the cartridge for thermite?
So what's going on with Metal Gear Solid 5 minus Kojima's name on it?
So
Phantom Pain's out. I'm happy. It's like the last game Konami's ever going to make we're going to care about, I guess. I don't know.
Honestly, I wish I could play Phantom Pain. People have been saying some cool stuff about it. I've always admired the Metal Gear series from afar, but I just don't have the time to catch up on it. I played the first one and loved it, the first Solid. Anyways, our DLC has now gotten to the point where it's microtransactions. There's two online modes for Metal Gear Solid 5, and you can flame me alive because I'll probably be a little inaccurate here since I'm not playing the game, but I've read up on it. There's two online game modes. There's Metal Gear Online, which is going to be more of the competitive online sort of thing. And then there's this other mode, Forward Operating Base, which to me sounds like... So what it says is you can buy these coins, Mother Base coins, right? And you can create these bases, and it takes a certain amount of time for enhancements or for these bases to be built. Just like any, like a smartphone game, you know, where like, you know, you can tap to build these zoos or these Simpsons neighborhoods, and you can either wait 6 hours for the construction to be completed, or you can pay the coins now to get all the perks up front. So that's
like,
what these...
Like a phone game.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It sounds like a phone type game. And you can take over other people's bases, and I think it gets you, it nets you some stuff that you can use in the real game. So what they've done, though, is they've started charging for coin packs that will let you do this, speed up the process. And I can't help but feel like this is where some of the initial friction between Kojima and Konami came around.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I really do. I'm not saying that Kojima, I don't know the guy, I'm not saying he would have been 100% against microtransactions. Well, I think he said in an interview he wasn't fond of them. But this is Konami's business model. This is what Konami's wanted to be for 2 years, and this is the fruition of it. It's like, here's our last game, and please look forward to what you have coming to you on your mobile phones. And I think that's what it is.
Well, part of, I guess, frustration is that, at least on this article from GameSpot, there's a suggestion from a screenshot is that they're going to put a cap on how many coins you can earn with.
Oh yeah, I think they said 80. 80 a day, but so, by not playing.
So that's like
by playing.
So that's like the Need for Speed app where you can race, but then you have to wait for the fuel to come back. So I have no problem if you want to like pay if you want to pay for stuff to get it quicker, but you got to have a way to keep the people who don't want to pay, keep some sort of even pace, even if it's by a lot more effort. You got to give them some chance, and this is not a chance.
You can make people grind, but to make people grind and to cap what they can grind on a daily basis, that's fucked up.
It's gross, as you would say.
It's gross. It's fucking gross. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot more to say, but I think it is kind of, like, sad and telling that here we have the last game, and it's like, okay,
microtransactions.
Here's a send-off. and this is what you have in store for the rest of the time.
At least they're not pushing you to like download the Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain like app game and then do shit on that.
Right, because the fucking app game is on the disc.
It's not the mobile version of the is now there. They did both. I always think it's funny how Phantom Pain to me always. I always think that when I hear the name Phantom Pain, it's like those people that get like leg amputations, but they still can feel pain in their leg, even though it's not there anymore.
Mm.
Their brain still thinks it's there.
Yeah.
That's always, is that Phantom Pain? Is that what it's called?
Yes. That is what it's called.
Does that have anything to do with the game at all?
Who knows?
I don't care about this game in the least. I'll
probably
just go on record as saying, but I think it's funny. So Kojima somewhere is shaking his head saying, I told you so. This is what I was trying to prevent. Maybe or maybe not. No.
Anyways, he's gone.
We don't care about Metal Gear Solid.
Actually, like I said, I kind of do.
Oh. But
anyway.
Ian cares about Metal Gear Solid.
So, all those carts got dug up in the desert, those E.T. carts.
The desert.
The desert. And
the desert of Alamogordo.
And they all got... And the ones that they were initially going to sell have been sold. They're holding on to some others, but they raised...
$108,000.
Right.
Really.
And 65,000 of that, I believe, is going to the city of
Alamogordo,
which is pretty awesome, actually.
17,000, almost a little over 16, is going to the Tularosa Basin Historical Society. And then there was $26,000 that were used to send the games to buyers around the U.S.
And France. And
France.
Overseas.
Brazil, Australia, Singapore, Canada, proving that there's people that will collect junk anywhere in the world.
Yes, but what I like about this is that these people's need to collect junk is helping...
The city.
A city.
That's fine.
And the guy who did the dig even said, you know, obviously the money is yours to do what you want to do with it. He's like, but I really don't want to see it go to sewer lines or, you know, something else boring like that. He's like, you know...
playground?
There's another meeting that they're going to have, and he said, he's like, I've got a few ideas if you might listen to it.
I have a great one.
Huh?
Reinvested another dig, because this is you have gold sitting in the ground. If they raise this much money, obviously, we talked about this before, when is it going to be diminishing returns? The first ones are going to go for a lot, then less and less.
I have a feeling that's probably what happened.
Even if the last ones went for hundreds, dig up 1,000 more and sell them for $100 each.
Yeah.
You're going to get another $100,000. Or what if they put, they're holding on to some, what if they say, you know what, the city needs a new basketball court, and let's sell more of them.
Well, the guy did say he's sitting on like 270 of them.
Yeah.
And he said that he's going to hold out in case there's another movie or, you know, if something E.T. happens again, you know, they'll sell them again and they'll put it, you know, they'll do the same thing. They'll put the money towards a good use any way they can.
I have no problem with people spending money the way they want to on the stuff. But if you spent this as an investment, you're a fool. Especially since they have so many more that they can sell right now, or they can get another bulldozer, dig up more. They only dug up whatever they said, whatever minute percentage.
A very small sample.
A minute percentage. Now there was some that was underneath that quote-unquote, that concrete layer, that it's going to be very hard to get to that. But there was a lot above that layer that they didn't even touch.
Yep.
They probably didn't touch, what, 5% of these? You know, like, it's a very small portion of these that are just sitting there. And you know what? 5 years from now, you know what? The town needs money. We're running out.
I think it's fantastic. It's like they're sitting on an oil well.
We need a new water treatment plant. We got to get some centipede carts out of the ground. Let's do it.
We got slap it in a bag with a certificate, and we got collectors who will pay $100
for
that.
Those idiot retro game collectors with way too much expendable income, they're gonna buy these up. They're going to eat it with a spoon. So they were used again in the Xbox documentary that came out last summer. And then, yeah, there was Pac-Man in here, Miss Pac-Man, Pele Soccer. Not sure what Pele went for in comparison to the others. Yars Revenge, Baseball, Centipede, Warlords, and, of course, E.T., which was a chunk of them. I'd have interest in this if it was, like, $30. I think I said this when we talked about it
initially. Yeah, I said I would pay $35 for, like, a Centipede cartridge.
With a little certificate saying, this was underground because we threw it out because it's trash.
I really like Centipede, and that would be kind of amusing. And, yeah, I'd pay $35 for that. I would not pay more than $35 for that.
I wonder if people put these on their wall, if they had these framed shadow box.
I wonder if they
dirty
smell.
Cartridge. You know what? A lot of these were sealed, so they probably kept the freshness locked in.
Kept the freshness locked in for
35 years.
I've wondered that since day one. Is there an odor associated with these cartridges?
I don't know. Most of them are in boxes still. There are not a lot of loose ones.
You gotta think. It's not like they were like mixing banana peels in with their cartridges.
I'm starving during this afternoon podcast. Even the fact you said banana peels made my mouth just water, which shows how hungry I am.
Banana peels.
I am hungry for a Pele soccer underground next to chemicals and, you know, 1983 Reese's Pieces wrappers. Mm. You know,
hey, that's good. That's a good tie-in with ET there.
I didn't realize that. I was just searching for some candy.
You picked the right one.
I cannot stop mentioning food. I'm starving.
I'm hungry,
too. I got to reach for a candy someone gave us in the mail. Okay. I'm going to say it's 50-50 more of these go on for sale. I'm going to say it's 80-20 that they're going to dig up more of these within the next 6-7 years.
I don't think it's 50-50. I think more will definitely go on sale.
90-10?
That guy's holding on to 270 for a reason. Whether or not they dig it up, I don't know.
He's thinking, oh, I got $20,000 laying in a box here
that
I can get. Yeah, why not? What if he pockets something like... puts them out of his own eBay account. He just does that. No?
Black label ones, you know, sold out of a trench coat on the side.
He comes to the swap meet and just starts selling them.
Yeah.
They don't believe him. All right.
So, there's a lot of follow-up today. And we're going to follow up on the Analog NT. For those of you who don't remember what the Analog NT was, it's a Nintendo and Famicom in one. One-piece machine-tooled metal casing.
Yep. Aluminum, yep. Wasn't it?
And it did RGB out, and initially it was going to give you the option to get an HDMI out converter.
On the outside. Four controller ports, so I think they're cannibalizing four scores, I think.
Four controller ports.
Otherwise, they're somehow fasting it. These come from, quote-unquote, broken-down Famicoms. They pull the chip out of the Famicom to do this.
So... what you ended up with was a very expensive $500 plus.
With the HDMI, I think it was like $580 about. Okay.
You ended up with a very nice looking system. It's gorgeous looking. I can't say anything about that. But what you had is you have a NES for rich fans of the Nintendo. Now, it does have a number of somewhat costly enhancements on it, but you're still paying, I think, a decent markup for look.
If you want the video quality to be, you know, RGB, if you want an HDMI output to a TV, this isn't a bad way to go if you have the money.
No, if you've got the money and you don't want to do the legwork, you're not exactly getting ripped off on this. So the price, while high, isn't the worst thing in the world. What's not so great is... small teams got to stop biting off more than they can chew. So, we talked about this in May of 2014.
I was so young then.
Man. Yeah, pubes. Anyways. so, we started talking about this in May 2014. There was supposed to be a ship date of September 2014. And people were getting charged. You know, basically, you pre-ordered it and you got charged at the cart.
It was off their website.
Yeah, it was off their website. And basically, people are getting their units now, and it's September 2015.
So a year almost after.
It took them almost 7 months, 8 months, I think, to get a video of a thing even working in action, not just a prototype unit.
Of a production unit that actually worked.
Yeah. I have two issues with it, despite the fact that some people seem to be pretty happy with it. My issue is... simply just in the ethical nature of how it was handled. So when you pre-order something, whether it be a movie, music, book, a piece of tech through a normal route outside of a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo, you are under the assumption that you are pre-ordering something that can be manufactured and sold then, especially if pre-orders open in May and the date for shipping is September.
Sure.
What we have been shown here is that I think this was more of a stealth Kickstarter sort of deal. I don't think there was anything in place to get this done. I don't think there's any reason why it could be so late. I think
so. When you say stealth Kickstarter, what you mean is that they did not have the funds to make the product until the pre-orders came.
They took the pre-order money to fund the venture,
okay,
and then start producing things, which is why we have ship dates that are now, over a year. A year
and
after.
Not everyone has their units yet either.
No. People have just started to get them, and they kept pushing it off. You know, I guess technically the first one was shipped in April, but that to me seems like a way to have them not have to say they're delaying it again. We shipped one, so we made our fifth ship date.
And we're talking about they sold, I think it was about 500 that they sold out on the first batch.
That I don't know, but yes, they did sell the first batch. I just don't know the numbers.
Okay.
The other problem that people are experiencing is this. They started using... what is assumed? I will just say assumed right now. They started using Kevtris's HDMI board internally for those who ordered the HDMI upgrade. This is problematic for one major reason. The HDMI upgrade was expensive, and there were a lot of people who wanted to get in on the ground floor of this because they liked the look of it, and the HDMI thing was supposed to be an external adapter,
yes.
Meaning that they could buy their analog NT, and then at a later date, if they wanted to, they could purchase this external adapter. Well, they on the fly switched up all the designs, and now it's all internal. Now, I'm sure you could probably open it and do it, but this is eliminating the convenience that the people with the money for this product wanted from this product. They cannot any longer just tack a module onto the back.
And this was never communicated to the people. So
maybe
if they did that, they could have said, okay, whatever percentage ordered them without the HDMI, I'm guessing it's a smaller number maybe, I don't know, 20%. Say, hey, listen, this is the situation. We're going to give you the option. If you want to spend to upgrade it, this is what's going to... You know, just communicate with them to see if there's some way you can work it out.
At least let them know that, okay, things have changed. We're sorry about that. This, just make sure you now know that this is your only chance to have it done officially through us.
Sure. Otherwise, now you have to do maybe a more expensive workaround, ship it off to somewhere else. I'm not sure how easy it is to open this up.
No.
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
It's a machine piece of aluminum.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's just like crunched in there. I don't know. But the good news is that I guess most people are satisfied with this. That they've gotten it. Like
they say that the RGB is too bright because there's no capacitors on it. But other than that, people say that the picture is nice. And I mean, honestly, I mean, I would take issue if you're an AV guy and you're buying this because you want the best possible picture, then why aren't you upset that your RGB is too bright? I don't know. I think a lot of people got this, and I mean, I can't argue it. It's a gorgeous looking thing. I think a lot of people got this and they're like, damn, this looks nice on my entertainment center, but. Did you get what you paid for? You didn't get properly tuned RGB. You got sent a system that is slightly different than what it was said it was going to be. I don't know how to feel about it. Like I said, I think that the analog guys do fantastic work when it comes to design, and a lot of their stuff, like their consoleized MVSs and stuff like that, look awesome, but this seems like one of those situations where a small team got in over their head.
Sure. I think a lot of times when you start business ventures with people, and this is probably, I don't know how big this group is that do all these, I want to say 4 or 5 max.
It can't be more.
A lot of times you start with a good idea, and then the organization just isn't there. You get in over your head, and you realize, oh no, we were too pie in the sky.
Yeah,
then you don't know how to react.
Let me interject real quick. By no means do I necessarily think this was malicious.
No.
I just think that this was botched.
Yeah, it wasn't handled probably as cleanly as it could have.
Sure.
They probably didn't have one person to say in the group, hey, listen, we should communicate these issues now so people don't get pissed that it's taken us almost a year to ship these.
Mm-hmm.
Even just saying, oh, this is delayed. Let's have reasons behind the delay. You have the people's money already in your pocket.
Right.
So it's like you owe them to say this is what's going on with it. That didn't happen. I hate to say it, a lot of that sometimes is, sometimes the people that are more technologically minded, sometimes, I hate to say it, don't know sort of the PR or social aspect when it comes to this stuff. You need a good mix of people in there maybe to do it. I'm not saying everyone there are just techno people that just work on stuff all day, but someone obviously here didn't say, like we were saying, you got to communicate this.
Yeah.
Just communicate it.
Just some words to your customers, it go a long way. I mean, I know this is different, but like even at work, if... You know, we get a particularly large volume of repairs or something coming in, and I'm going to be running late, and my distributor doesn't have all the parts I need. I will call them up and be like, "Hey, we're running, you know, 5 days behind." It takes, you know, with email, it's easy. Like they have more customers, but it's just here's your email list. Hey, everyone, this is what's going on.
I did see someone. I don't know if this is true. I did saw murmurings about some games not playing, like Castlevania 3 wasn't working on certain units, but someone can maybe I don't know if that's true or not.
I saw one complaint of compatibility, but I would love to believe that that's wrong simply because this is supposedly all done from straight up
from
Nintendo parts.
Yeah,
so there should be.
If it's a Famicom PPU, yeah. The CPU, you should play. Not only play every game, but you should have the edited in, you know,
you
audio.
You do have the edited in audio. So there should be zero.
Yeah.
There should be zero compatibility issues. If there are, that's going to raise some questions. And then there are some people who have said that, and this would be annoying to hardcore collectors. But it hasn't really been verified yet that the way the metal flaps are, there's some like sharper edges, and they've actually scratched or scuffed cartridges. Would it make me happy? Wouldn't kill me, but I know a lot of people who it would destroy.
I ain't putting an expensive cartridge in there,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, they miscalculated by a millimeter or two. It sounds like, so, or maybe people are.
I didn't see it. I haven't seen proof of it.
This is alleged.
I've seen
allegedly
people talking about it, so I'm not trying to throw them under the bus.
No,
here.
No.
Bringing it up.
Allegedly.
So, I mean, yeah. And in the end, if everyone gets these things and everyone's happy, then
they look beautiful.
Then there's a happy ending to the story. Yeah. And I'm not gonna lie, if I had money to fucking throw around, I'd probably get one. Just cause.
Use it for the marathon?
I'd slap my EverDrive in the damn thing, which is the funny part, but it would look nice, you know? And it would more importantly, it would look really nice on my TV without needing a FrameMeister or an XRGB or something like that.
I'm actually glad for a change that I don't care about. I'm not the only guy that has to have the top picture quality everywhere. I'm fine with the CRT. Otherwise, if I put money into this and waited a year, I would not be pleased. So I'm actually happy that I don't care as much about how the game looks versus how it just plays.
I just need a CRT too, but I mean, you know,
I get
in
one
the
in the
living
garage.
Room. Yeah,
the main cabinet, you can take that one.
Fuck,
you can.
I know. I have a CRT. I don't have anything comparable in the living room.
Swami still have them all the time for like $10, $15 for
what
like 20-inch, 15-inch.
We're getting off topic. But what I want is I want a PVM to put in my little corner with my synthesizer, so that like I can just do old school stuff and have it look nice. In my little room.
And that's where we end the topic.
Yes. So, the FTC has come down on, I always say Machinima.
Machinima is one of the largest, I think it's in the top three YouTube networks. We spoke about this briefly, and I think in the fall, how in the UK, the UK's form of the FTC, which is the Federal Trade Commission, was starting to come down on YouTubers in the UK, saying, okay.
Basically what happened was, there was a... In the lead-up to the release of the Xbox One, Microsoft offered Machinima content creators the ability to do basically adverts for them in exchange for money.
Supposed to be sponsored videos.
Sponsored videos.
With individual YouTubers on their network.
And I would point out that even though I don't love big corporations... Microsoft, looking at the rules and all that laid out,
it's fine.
They followed. They covered their asses. What Machinima did was, I think they blatantly told them not to acknowledge the fact that this was pay for play. And so what you had was a multiple weeks or a month worth of videos that were casting the Xbox One in a supposedly fantastic and amazing light, but people were making $15,000 per video,
what happened was big YouTubers, and this happens now, this happens with mobile games, it happens with indie games, that YouTubers are paid money to play games or to give reviews, which is fine, as long as it's disclosed clearly that it's a sponsored video. Clearly. Somewhere in the description, somewhere in the title, that this is a sponsored video.
Wear a goddamn t-shirt that says, I am currently being sponsored while making
this
video.
You can't make money, but there's rules to follow to prevent stuff like this to happen, where consumers are fooled thinking, oh, my favorite YouTuber loves the Xbox One. I'm going to buy one too. That's called deceptive advertising. And that's why Federal Trade Commission exists, so that they protect the consumer base from this type of bullshit from happening. You can say, oh, buyer beware. No, it's not exactly that, because when you look up to people, or there's people out there that are advertising something and you're not sure about it, now we're talking about fraud.
Well,
we're getting into
a
fraudulent activity.
Let's say there's a movie reviewer that you feel like you really click with, and then all of a sudden you start going to see a couple movies this person's recommending, and you're like, wait a second, this sucks, and it's nothing like what they said. It's the same sort of deal. You build up these trusting relationships, and... you take their opinions because you think their opinions are similar to yours.
So these are called influencers usually for things like that. You're an influencer to this market of a product that we're buying. So they weren't, the YouTubers didn't adequately disclose what they were promoting. So usually when you get these, how this works is a lot of times they have to be pre-approved by the final company, but a lot of times they don't care as much about, as long as they'll say clearly though. They'll say clearly, you have to say this video was sponsored by this.
Yeah.
They say that because these big companies don't want to get in trouble that are dishing out hundreds of thousands of dollars for this. So you're saying that they told the YouTubers not to do that? Not to put
well,
that
I
in the video?
I seem to remember from the previous time we covered it that the big problem was that Machinima had sent out an email that basically had said that they weren't supposed to talk about it.
Or at least Machinima is required at least to tell their YouTubers that the sponsorship is clearly disclosed.
Right.
So maybe they failed to do that. Maybe they failed to say, these are the rules, this is what you have to do. Because the legit ones nowadays make sure that that is said clearly. But here's what I'm going to say here. This ain't all on Machinima. I'm putting this also on some individual YouTubers that should know better.
Or should have better ethics.
They should know better that if I'm getting paid $15,000, you're not a small YouTuber, by the way.
No.
So you have a large fan base. If you're getting paid $15,000 to do a shill review, you have this at some point say, I should disclose this because they're gonna be, I can have hundreds of my fans, if not thousands, going buying this product because I'm saying it, and they don't realize I'm getting paid for it. Regardless of what if their review is positive, if they're paid or not. That's regardless of that, it's an ethical situation, as we just said.
Well, I can't find anything that's linking back to what we discussed the first time, but I was under the impression that it was a fairly well-worded thing to...
Well, you can read the full complaint against it. So this goes back to probably Machinima not disclosing it, the YouTubers not putting it on there, and no one following up, no one at Machinima looking at all these videos on YouTube and saying, whoa, we can't have these published because it's not there. So this was like, the safety that should be in place anyway wasn't there.
Right.
We spoke about this before where there's a lot, this happens all the time now with YouTubers. A YouTuber can get paid $6,000-$7,000 to do a 5-minute playthrough on a mobile phone app. Again, if they disclose it, that's absolutely fine. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not hating on how you're making money, but you got to disclose it. You got to eat. I disclose my Loot Crate unboxing. I say it's paid for. This has been sponsored by Loot Crate. I have to say that. Otherwise, I'm not just, you know, shilling for the heck of it. You know, I do like Loot Crate.
I just bit my lip so hard.
Why?
Well, because you, I mean, sometimes I
about
say
my Loot Crate?
No.
About a YouTuber getting paid money to do a video?
And then complaining about it? Yeah. Anyways, whatever.
Well, that's... Some YouTubers don't know how good they got it.
No, they really don't.
Playing shitty mobile games for 5 minutes.
Oh my god, I have to do 4 hours worth of work for $7,000. My life is fucking awful. Woe is me. Anyway,
so I wish I had that. But anyway, so this goes back to, I always bring up the infamous, might have been 2 years ago too, on the 360 when they did that summer of Microsoft Xbox Live fun, and you had this is on Polaris though. It was GameStation at the time, playing a week of playing shitty download games like that awful Ninja Turtles game. And you have them on account saying, oh, today we're playing Ninja Turtles. And it's like, you didn't get up in the middle of your August summer and say, I want to play a shitty Ninja Turtles Xbox game.
Right.
Just because. You're getting paid for it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting money for it. You know, that's all. I'm not trying to hate, just saying you got to disclose this to the common man because a lot of people are dumb, don't realize when they're watching something, may not be the truth. So, speaking of people that are pissed off, I'm not pissed off. Actually, he's not pissed off.
Me? I'm not pissed off.
You're surly. So
I'm in a pretty good mood today.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, then you should get fish tacos with me later. Oh. We don't have fun time, Ian and I. So Jimmy Kimmel responded to the start of YouTube Gaming. We reported on it. Jimmy Kimmel has a very good late night talk show. I like Jimmy Kimmel. I like him a lot.
We're basically best friends with Jimmy Kimmel.
He's not. He's
name dropping.
We hung out a few years ago. I don't know. We
played. Ooh, that party was insane.
He likes the 32X. Who wouldn't have thought? during his monologue, he did an innocuous, like 2-minute little jokey video about the launch of YouTube
and why
gaming.
The fuck do people watch Let's Players?
Basically, it came down to not understanding the Let's Play market.
Sure.
And so it was a fake commercial like, now coming to YouTube, you can watch gamers playing games. But coming soon, you can watch gamers watching people playing games. So it kept pancaking where you had a guy watching something else. And it was just a silly sort of video where, oh, Slavin, you're making fun of Let's Plays.
Right.
I've made fun of Let's Plays before. South Park's made fun of Let's Plays before. So apparently, YouTube and people who like games didn't really like that and gave just the most vitriolic responses and it was like 90% thumbs down to the video.
Well,
and I thought it was entertaining just because Jimmy Kimmel then responded a few days later saying, oh, I've gotten all this hatred, and then ran through the list of all the hatred he got and some of, like, you know, people threatening violence against him. Some were actually funny, he admitted. But
okay, some were funny, but some, I mean, were threatened violence against him. Some told him to kill himself. And what he even said on a more serious note was, he's like, you'd be surprised at how much of this was aimed at my wife and kids.
Sure.
And everyone bitches about, like, so many video game players bitch about how they're cast in a poor light. Here's an idea. Why not, how about we don't fly off the fucking deep end every single time someone says something about our hobby that is even remotely joking or negative? I mean, it's innocuous. The guy doesn't understand games that much. He certainly doesn't understand Let's Plays. I play video games and I don't really understand Let's Plays. I mean, it's just, it's stupid. And, you know, this is mimicking something I read in an article elsewhere, but, you know, they made a good point. He's a comedian by trade, right? Okay, this is what he does. He pokes fun at shit every night. Politics, religion, sex, all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was the reaction from video gamers that was so intense that he felt the need to address it again on his show.
Yeah, he's actually upset people enough to actually march in front of his studio. Like, he's actually upset people on a much smaller scale. Here's the thing, though. He put the video on YouTube. If he didn't, no one would have watched it, because a lot of people on YouTube don't watch TV, especially late night. Puts it on YouTube. YouTube is a big chunk of its gaming. Obviously, YouTube gaming, there's a spinoff site. There's no spinoff site for cars. There's no spinoff site for political talk on YouTube for gaming.
Yes,
it's a huge chunk.
But there are people who are very much into politics who will watch his show every night, and they will probably not agree with him, and he probably does not get the same sort of betrayal of hatred.
But that's another point about it's the audience. I hate to say
that's
it.
What I'm saying, yes.
Gamers have a bad rap, and a lot of it's deserved.
It's earned, because you act like fucking babies.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes down to individuals being bad.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at some of the responses, and some were trying to, which I thought was actually cute, trying to explain why Let's Plays were so good. And it's like, okay, you have a big comment, maybe you have YouTube fans, you actually get a shine a light on your channel by leaving a comment, because people can read it, gets thumbed up, whatever. People are trying to say, well, you watch sports, we watch esports, it's the same thing. I'm not going to get into why that's kind of silly to say something like that, but whatever. The whole point is that you're yelling at a guy who doesn't give a shit.
Right.
To begin with. He's getting more material for this. He gets most of his views off a different audience that aren't watching gaming on YouTube. His audience are watching on TV, or maybe they're fans like Conan O'Brien watching clips like that. But he's being himself. He's not pandering. He's a comedian. He's just going with what he thinks is funny. And you're attacking him like a fucking baby.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to.
Like a spoiled, rotten shit.
Are you at the point now? I consider myself a gamer in some respects, but that's not my identity. I think that's a problem with whether it's identity in politics or in your hobby, is that you can more easily get offended when stuff like this happens. Because to you, that's your entire world. I am a gamer. You are insulting my world. You're insulting me. This is all I have to stake my existence on. And that's a very dangerous place to go. But unfortunately, that's where a lot of people are with their hobbies, where they're just so singularly minded on what they do and identifying it with who they are being that, and that's it. And this is the result, though. People don't know how to handle it.
Well, people will chime in, I'm sure. And it's off the cuff. But I'm hard-pressed to think of a hobby, because that's what gaming is. It's a hobby. I'm hard-pressed to think of a hobby that is so treated like a lifestyle, which is why I feel like the reaction gets as strong as it is because these people spend their entire lives embroiled in the, or entrenched in this hobby, and they feel like their very life is being attacked, and it's not.
Yeah, I don't see this happening with sports fans, guys that are like hardcore. I don't see this happening. I don't see them reacting the same way as a gamer would. I just don't.
No.
I don't. Maybe.
And there are lots of sports fans that will adopt sports. Like they will be as into sports as people will be in the games, but. I don't know how to say it. To phrase it properly, but it's all too very personal, and I almost feel like there's a lot of gamers who want to be upset. There's this persecution complex that I don't feel like has existed since the late 90s.
Well, I think in general there's sort of this victim persecution complex that social media has encouraged. This could be a side effect of it, but in general, gamers are the most pleasant in their interaction, you know, in online games. Not saying all, but they're not known to be pleasant with each other to begin with, so why would they be pleasant whether they're discussing PS4 sucks, Xbox One is better, whether they're discussing you suck at this game, I'm better, while you're playing, that's the worst trash talk ever, and chat. But you see what I mean, though? A lot of gaming is competitive by nature, but then it's an ugly side of the competitiveness, and maybe that comes out in social interaction on top of that.
Right.
I'm just gonna throw this out there, though. I applaud Jimmy Kimmel for not pretending he likes this, because he could more easily have gotten, if he threw his integrity into the dirt, gotten way more fans by saying, oh, I like this. Someone like Conan O'Brien really, in my eyes, took a big hit. Now Conan O'Brien does a lot of video game stuff. He's playing with developers. Conan O'Brien doesn't give a shit about these games.
He
was never a gamer. It's very convenient that all of a sudden he starts doing game videos the past couple of years with publishers like he starts playing Mortal Kombat with guys in the NFL.
All I'm saying is this. I don't know these guys personally. I don't know what they do in their free time. I do agree with you that if Jimmy Kimmel does not like it or does not understand it, which is obviously he doesn't, he is not faking it. But I'm on the other side of the coin, I cannot say that Conan is faking it.
He's got a lot more balls in order to say, you know what, I don't understand it, and I'm going to trash it for a joke. And you know what? The joke was funny.
But what if Conan actually likes games? Does he have no balls because he likes games and he's doing something that's popular
now? If he liked the games, he should have been doing this for the past 8, 9, 10 years, and not only because it's popular on YouTube now. That's all I'm saying. He's the only guy doing it. You don't see.
I don't watch this shit either way. I'm just saying. I can't state to know these people personally. But yes, I agree.
I like Conan, but I just think it's kind of cheesy that he's doing that now.
I do admit that Kimmel, took the harder path there.
Oh yeah, he always does. Though he back when it was a Conan versus Leno thing. Oh, Kimmel gave Leno so much shit, most out of all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, he gave more than Conan did. He gave him more than even Letterman was giving.
Oh, he was pretty.
Kimmel was vicious, going over the throat.
Brutal.
It was fantastic. So all right, so it's calm down. Some guy who's doesn't care about what you're doing anyway in your hobby. You know, making a joke about it. It's just calm down.
Yeah, how's it affecting you? It's not taking away your video games.
You're not less of a person.
Whether I'm not even going to go by name, but any video game controversy in the past, 2-3 years, it always seems to boil down to these people thinking that their video games are going to go away or something's going to change. You know what? Nothing's going to fucking change. You're going to get your video games. Jimmy Kimmel's opinion of Let's Plays does not change the fact that next week you can go out and buy Metal Gear Solid.
You can still waste
can
still waste your entire weekend playing games if you want to. You can do it.
Yeah, it's okay.
You don't have to see the sunshine anymore. Sunshine on my shoulder makes me happy. What's next?
So, Capcom. Capcom is doing a Resident Evil Origins collection because what's Capcom got to do right now? Pump out collections. I will say, I have the Mega Man Legacy Collection, and I'm loving the hell out of it. They're really, really great, really well presented and all that stuff. But so this is just funny to me because, all right, so they're doing a remake of Resident Evil 0, and they're doing a remake of Resident Evil 2. And there's already a remake of Resident Evil 1, and they HD-ified that for a download release recently. So what they're doing is now they're doing this Resident Evil 0 remake, but they're going to bundle it with the Resident Evil 1 remake and charge you $30 for it, so that if you don't have this remake one of the two other times it's been released, you can get the new remake with this old remake for $30 as opposed to paying $20 each for them digitally. So it's just, it's this fun set package of, let's just... Huh. Capcom just keeps repackaging and repackaging and repackaging and repackaging. And I wouldn't be surprised if when the Resident Evil 2 HD, you know, remake comes out down the line, they won't find another way to package it all back up again together. I think it's kind of cool because these are games, but in a way I do think it's cool because these are games that people really, really like and they have an attachment to. And the Resident Evil 1 remake, which is now in HD, it came out on the GameCube, now you can get it for download. It's taking games that had very old, clunky mechanics and making them work better and freshening them up. And I'm actually all for that because you need to be able to take these stories that people love and admit that you were working with a limited set of technology at the time and that you could do it better, and then hopefully you actually do it better and you put it out and more people get to enjoy your game. I'm okay with that. It's just funny to me how many different ways they will configure this shit to get it out to you.
Well, sure. As much as they can possibly get away with it. Yeah. I mean, that's the answer.
Yeah.
So they had... See, I didn't know they did the original Resident Evil HD remaster earlier in the year. I had no idea.
Well, so it came out on GameCube first. When
I knew they had it remastered on GameCube.
Yeah, so it's the same one, but they cleaned it up.
Okay, they made it a little...
And nice. It's well-regarded. It's a very well-regarded, remake, remaster of the game. So now they're doing the Origins one, which is... now they're doing Zero.
What is the Zero series? I have no idea.
Zero started on the... Or Zero is one entry. It's on the GameCube. It's a prequel. And there's a lot of puzzle solving because you can switch between two characters that are at different parts of this train that you're on.
Okay.
I'm not real familiar with Resident Evil. That's more Bonnie's thing, but... There's a woman, and then there's a guy who looks like Billy Ray Cyrus, and those are the two characters.
Wesker?
No. But Wesker is being added into this Resident Evil Zero remaster. But no, Billy Ray. No, this guy just straight up looks like Billy Ray Cyrus.
According to this article, they're actually going to do a 360 and PS3 ports of Resident Evil Zero HD remaster. Wow. So.
They are. But I think
not dead yet.
But I think it said that they will probably not offer them separately as downloads, so you either get the pack or you don't.
I think it's how cute how quickly they're trying to shuffle away the last generation. They're not even 2 years old, these systems, yet. And they're like, no, PS3 doesn't exist anymore. Just no new games for that anymore. You got 1 year of games after it came out that you're not getting a second
We've
year.
We've had this. I don't mind. We've had this discussion.
I think it's funny just because the technological leap is just like a half step. It's not even a half step. It's like a...
I think that's almost why they're doing it so quickly is because, okay, the technology isn't the huge jump, but we need games to make people to buy this, so...
Yeah, we talked about that with the Rare Replay pack out.
Yeah.
Xbox One exclusive, silly, but they want people to have a reason for buying the freaking system.
Right, you could have put that on a 360 and it would have been just fine.
You could have put that on Xbox original. you could have done that. This was kind of surprising to see that Mega Man... The movie rights has been secured by 20th Century Fox. What?
Fucking hell.
out of all the studios to get it, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I have no faith in Fox, but, my initial impression right off the bat is that's live action. And I cannot think of a video game that is less suited for live action than yes. Mega Man. I hesitated because Mario is pretty high up there and that was done, but Mega Man is all about this cute little robot guy running around, killing other cute little robots and getting their weapons and running and jumping through fantastical stages, and there's a paper-thin storyline that ties it all together about love and friendship and companionship, and I mean, you can totally do this as like a cartoon movie, but live action, this isn't going to hit. It's just not going to feel right at all.
Does Fox even have an animation division anymore that does stuff?
I don't believe so, no.
There's always like those three or four crappy movies that come at each other animated that always do horribly. There was like a Little Red Riding Hood one that came out like a couple years ago that bombed miserably because it looked like it was done in someone's computer. You know, like it wasn't even like well done. So, I mean, you have like Disney does their stuff, Pixar does their stuff. There's probably one or two other animation studios. I don't remember a Fox doing a decent animated movie off the top of my head in a while. Some of the comments could focus me on what I should be thinking about there. But the problem with this is that they have not proven they can adapt properties that are well beloved. Obviously,
no.
X-Men went from good to awful to now it's somewhat decent again.
Right, and that's all a fluke, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and then because they fucked up Elektra. Daredevil wasn't that good. Then obviously, Fantastic Four is in. If there's a word,
irreparable shambles,
ruins. Is there a word below ruins that we could say? Is it
catacombs?
Almagordo landfill is where Fantastic Four is. So here's the other problem: to do this movie is going to cost money if it's live action. I'm picturing the closest thing in my head. I can picture the Wachowski brothers doing Speed Racer.
It would have to be Speed Racer style.
Like, where it's, like, 90% CG, like, backgrounds
the
and stuff.
I mean, you look at a Mega Man level, you look at the world that they created for this character, the entire thing is going to have to be CG.
You can't build sets for... you know what I mean? It'd be hard to build sets for this, because that's not the world...
It would be awesome, but, I mean, yeah, it would be nearly impossible.
I can't... It'd be awesome if they could do, like... sort of Star Wars style droids as the enemies, like the hard hats and everything, like that would be cool. But I'm sure you could do that a little bit. But the amount of money to do a Mega Man movie, we're talking over $100 million easily.
I imagine they go grimdark and get fucking Snyder in here to direct it, and it's all about how he hates women.
You get an emo guy to do it.
Yeah,
I'm not a man anymore. No, I am a man. I'm more than a man. I don't know. It's silly.
This guy with blue jeans and a denim jacket and a gun. No
the
arm
gun,
cannon.
The gun happens to kind of go over like the wrist a little bit, right. But it can slip it on and off.
Dr. Light locked this gun to my hand, said I would always need it on me.
All right. I don't know. It would roll be some hottie with like a bikini top.
That's horrifying to think about. Roll's like 5. So, yeah, that's just, I mean, but, oh, you know what? Why don't we just talk about something else that's fucking ridiculous and talk about how Ubisoft is going to open a motherfucking theme park in Malaysia. In 2020.
First of all, I'm just surprised because for Malaysia to be the target, first of all, it's kind of weird for Ubisoft. Ubisoft's a French company, correct?
Yes.
What did you put in France then, or the U.S. where a lot of people play Assassin's Creed? What do you have? Rayman? You have Assassin's Creed?
You have Rayman, you have Raving Rabbids, you have Far Cry.
What else are you putting in Ubisoft theme park? That people want to see.
I want to see a historic hall that documents their beginnings as bootleggers and modders of PC Engine consoles in France, because that's how they got their start.
But, oh, okay.
They were a gray market distributor of PC Engine consoles and games. That's the coolest thing about Ubisoft.
Well, the vice president, Jean de Rivière, senior vice president of Ubisoft Motion Pictures. I guess you're going to try to plan Motion Pictures for us? Wow.
Oh, so Prince of Persia.
Yeah, okay. That was already, what, 5 years ago?
No, I'm just saying.
When did that come out?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just blurting out another property
But was that Ubisoft Motion Pictures, or that someone just bought the rights to do Prince of Persia? That was already 5 years old, wasn't that movie?
I don't know. It doesn't
Jake
matter.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
This is a ridiculous concept. How are we even going... I mean... Video games are fleeting. Are you telling me that Assassin's Creed is going to be a draw for people to fly to fucking Malaysia in 2020? That's 5 goddamn years away.
Malaysia's not really in my top 10 places to visit in the world anyway. I'm trying to think if this would sort of nudge people over the top. Maybe in France. You go to Malaysia. There's always those countries you don't expect that you get a lot of tourists. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people come to San Diego from countries you wouldn't expect. Like, oh, why would you come to San Diego? Because their country doesn't have what San Diego has to offer. Maybe Malaysia has stuff that people in Germany want to, go visit, and Ubisoft is there.
I mean,
I'm just interested to know that, are they putting the cart before the horse? Maybe they are doing an Assassin's Creed movie. They are doing that. That's
sure.
Going to come out.
Great.
Supposedly.
Awesome.
So maybe they're banking on, okay, we're going to have a big, like Marvel. Maybe it's like having a Marvel theme park, but it's an Ubisoft universe.
So they're doing this because they released a Dark Ride. And if you don't know what a Dark Ride is, I love Dark Rides.
There's no light.
Dark Rides? No, there is. I used to call them diorama rides. They're the rides that you sit on and you go through, like, a lot of Disneyland and Disney World rides are dark rides, where you sit in the car and you go through and you see things happen and you come out the other end.
It's a Small World, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, those are dark rides.
Okay.
Pirates is a classic example. So they put a Rayman Raving Rabbids dark ride into some French theme park called Futuroscope, and apparently it's enjoyed some success. So they've decided... fuck it! We're gonna make our own theme park in Malaysia! Let's do it! Let's go! We've got the money! Let's do this!
It'd be nice to see it. I'm trying to think if ever in the history of the world a video game company could have been destroyed by opening a theme park that failed.
By their own hubris?
Now you got a chance to see it starting 2020. I don't know what else to say about this. Unless they're putting out movies. I mean, Marvel did a touring sort of, not even theme park, but a touring sort of attraction.
If Marvel can't...
But that's Marvel and Disney.
Yeah.
I don't know if Marvel could put out their own theme park in the middle. That's like us saying, okay, we're going to, in Alaska, we're going to put out a Marvel theme park and have people fly to it, you know? Now, I'm sure Malaysia, I'm sure there's tons of nice spots in Malaysia. I'm just not familiar. But I'm saying, out of all the countries to pick Malaysia to do it, and then we're talking Marvel is huge, and Disney. Ubisoft, while big, comparatively to the rest of the world, is not. So this is a big gambit they're going to do, that they can put these properties in work.
Another property that they're going to base the theme park rides on is Just Dance. So that should be great. Because... Man, if there are some identifiable characters in a game, it's Just Dance. It's Just Dance.
Isn't the game a theme park ride to begin with?
Yeah.
And I like Just Dance. I like Just Dance, the original dancing game that doesn't require a pad.
You know? This is just some nonsense. Every guest will be a player. Okay, that means nothing.
That sounds almost dirty.
Oh, choke on your own farts, Ubisoft.
Steven Spielberg was interviewed recently. He has a lot of movies coming out. Steven Spielberg always has. He's still working hard. He's got to be close to 70 by now. He's always still...
Doesn't look a day over 60, though.
He's still, but he has a movie coming out. He directs a movie almost one a year. Sometimes more than one a year he has come out. And his age is incredible. And plus, he's always producing four or five other movies.
I was going to say, he's always producing. That's what I always noticed.
But at least one movie a year he directs just about, if not more. For a guy of his caliber is tough, especially at his age. So he was promoting... Cold World film Bridge of Spies, starring Tom Hanks, and it's great when they work together, Tom Hanks and Spielberg. What was the one that he did with Tom Hanks before? He's done a lot with Tom Hanks. He's Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. He did the one Catch Me If You Can. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good movie. He did that one where Tom Hanks is stuck. He's a foreigner stuck in an airport and can't leave it. That one was a little more shaky. Supposedly those reviews didn't see that one.
Yeah,
but he's back for this one, a little bit more serious movie. And so he was asked about superhero movies. What do you think about the genre? What it's doing? And he said, "We were around when the Western died, and there will be a time when the superhero movie goes the way of the Western. Doesn't mean there won't be another occasion where the Western comes back and the superhero movie someday returns. Of course, right now the superhero movie is alive and thriving. I'm only saying that these cycles have a finite time in popular culture. There will come a day when the mythological stories are supplanted by some other genre that possibly some young filmmaker is just thinking about discovering for all of us."
I think, so it's funny because right after that, like in that article, someone's like, "Harsh words from Spielberg." It's like, no, those aren't actually harsh words at all. I actually pretty much agree 100% with what he's saying. The Westerns were saturated. They did what they could with them, and people moved on. And you still get the Western, and the Western might come back. But we are... I like superhero movies. I love them. I read comic books. But we are looking at another 6 years of very tightly packed schedules with tons of superhero movies, both DC and Marvel.
DC jumping in, doing two or three movies a year. Marvel's doing two or three years. Hell, I want to count all the other fantastical, quote-unquote... movies, like, you're going to get two Star Wars movies a year on top of that. You're going to have a ton of these movies that all have the same audience. All are these fantastical stories with superhero-type people in them, whether they're Jedi or Caped Crusaders. You know, that's a lot of audience to take in and absorb, and they got to rest at some point.
Yeah, I don't think that's harsh. I think that's just the cycle of...
It's a cycle.
It's a cycle of trend, too. I mean...
And plus, you got to remember is that these huge superhero movies aren't being buoyed by comic book readers. They're by casual people on the street. They're like, Iron Man, I'll give it a chance. Captain America, I kind of remember that. Oh, Avengers has them all. If these disappeared, it's not like their worlds would be shattered. They would just go to something else.
Yes.
That's not to say that Marvel's not going to still be pumping out good movies until we're dead, because they probably will at this point. But the interest will wane, and when the interest wanes, the fringe ones will disappear first. So right now, you can get a Deadpool movie, and you might have an audience for that. But Spielberg's saying 5-10 years from now, you probably won't have that.
Right. Right now, you can get yourself your Doctor Strange movie. 10 years, you would never get it. You know, I'm sure at some point there will be a reboot to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it will be significantly more pared down with fewer releases.
Could be.
It's just, I mean, I don't know that they'll necessarily disappear, but I understand the basic idea of the question. Yes, it's going to wane in popularity.
Yeah, Spielberg was off on Westerns in this respect. With the Western, the vast majority of the Westerns were made-up characters that weren't there before. Whether it's Rawhide Kid, Gunsmoke, I'll throw in Series 2 because a big chunk of the TV series in the 50s going into the even mid-60s were a lot of these were Westerns.
Yes.
So you have a lot of these that... my dad loved Gunsmoke. That's another one.
That one that lasted forever, and it was like an independent story each episode.
Have Gun Will Travel was one that was on for like 3-4 years. That's a cool one. That's the one my dad liked. It was that one. There's a board game with that. So you had a lot of these that were, they's cool to watch them. Oh, Clint Eastwood gets his start on this one, you know. And, oh, this actor gets his start, and they move on their stuff. They were cheap to produce. Westerns, that's one of the reasons why they lasted that long. They reused a lot of the same sets, were out there, Western sets. You see the same Western set. And in 8 movies that came out in 5 years, you probably see the same exact town being used. Maybe dressed a little differently. And they were cheap to do Westerns.
Yeah.
You get the outfits, we have them in the stores. You get the guns, you get a couple of horses. There's your Western. It's right there. You don't need elaborate effects, you don't need sets. You just need blanks in your gun. So that's one of the reasons they lasted. With superhero movies... You are creating different worlds, though. You are creating, you know, an Ant-Man movie at this point is far different than a Batman movie. So it may be strung out a little bit longer than the Westerns, maybe 15 years. I don't know. I'm trying to think as I go here. But I will say this, though. Speaking of Ant-Man, I didn't feel the need to see Ant-Man within the first couple of weeks when it came out.
No. I haven't seen it yet.
So it's only been... These Marvel movies have only been out for 7 years now. It's only been 7 years, and we're talking, what is that, about 16 movies? Something like that? Something in that ballpark. 15 movies? Something like that?
Sure.
And already, I'm like, okay, I don't feel the need to see this one away. Or maybe I'll wait a little bit to see what the reviews are.
We're entering the expanded universe, and there are going to be expanded universe movies like... I mean, I'm just making that term up, but...
Ant-Man,
I want to see it, but, you know, Bonnie and I will try to see it this week before it leaves theaters. Doctor Strange, I will try to go see that first week because I love Doctor Strange. But yeah, there's a lot of these where I'm going to be like, I can take a pass maybe entirely, or I can definitely wait until stuff calms down. It's not a lack of interest for me. It's just that now we have so many options when it comes to them that I don't have to go to everyone.
Plus, you have all these great DCs doing well with their TV series. You have Marvel doing their Netflix thing. You can get your superhero fix anywhere now.
Yeah.
Daredevil season 2 is already going to come out.
There's these things called comic books.
No one's reading it, but there's things called comic books that, you know, they're...
People read more comic books now than ever.
It's still a loss leader, though, for the most part, versus the huge movies, you know. It's like, oh, by the way, we have these comics that are... These guys in these movies that are making us millions of dollars. By the way, we have these comics you can read, too. They're cute. They're like little party...
That's why it's called parties. A comic book movie?
Where are we? Q&A time?
We're at Q&A.
Q&A time on the CU podcast at Daniel Zwan. Is trading retro games a viable way to decrease the price of a certain game due to less demand?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. I think that the more trading exists... I think there's a greater potential for the monetary value of the game to be viewed as less. And I think one reason is if you're trading, especially with friends, and you're literally trading, they have something that you want, and you have things that they want, and someone in that trade is going to get a way better deal than the other person.
Maybe.
Not always, but oftentimes, because... If you want something, you're willing to let something go for, how should I put it?
Less than what you can get on eBay.
Yeah, less than what you can get it for on eBay. You're not always looking for that full value. And if that continues to happen, something can be seen as worth less. I don't think that this is what he's really getting at, but just to make sure, is trading retro games a viable way to decrease the price of a certain game? Absolutely.
Well, you're taking two buyers off the market for each respective game automatically. That's increasing the demand. It is. That demand's gone.
Right.
If we both have a game we both want, I have Battle Chess, and you want, I don't know, a random game like Destination Death Star.
Destination Danny Sullivan. Destination...
What is it? Anyway. I don't know. Destiny of an Emperor. You can go on eBay and buy it. I can go on eBay and buy my game. We can say, oh, I want that, buy it now. Or even adding one extra person to that auction will bump the price up.
Right.
Take those people out. The price will go down.
Yeah.
Just by... It's less demand. You're taking... and plus, with something like eBay, you can have artificial inflation of prices just because of the weird shit that happens. So, yeah, you will get less. It will decrease it, but the scale has to be so large for it to be noticeable.
Yes.
So, but overall, I love trading because of that, though.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. I mean, in a small room, you know, and on a small scale, trading is a great way to get more expensive stuff for cheaper. Like Pat said, it would take a lot of that on a larger scale to actually affect the price, but... you know, when you decrease demand and you're also at the same point in time not decreasing copies that are on a shelf for someone else to go pick up who wants it, you are in some way flapping the butterfly's wings and affecting maybe down the line the price of a game.
Yeah, plus you make friends, you know, if you trade with someone. I've been to meetups where you just, oh, I have a box stuff, you have a box stuff, we'll trade. And usually people try to do the right thing and not totally screw the other person. By the way, it's Destination Earth Star. Did you review this for the book or I did? I need a label upgrade. Is a little... Actually, I can glue it. I can glue the edges coming out there.
Awesome.
Use just a glue stick. Maybe get a little toothpick, put it underneath, and just... It works. Voila. The label comes back down.
All right.
What? It's past tips of the day here for collecting tips of the day.
Literally the day. Tyson Freitas. Have you ever bought something for so little you felt scummy about it afterwards?
Closest thing that I ever felt scummy was buying... I bring it up because it's the coolest thing ever. When I got the night vision for $10 and it's worth, like, over $1,000. That was the one thing where... I never showed you my night vision?
Oh, yes.
That was the only thing where I was like... I felt bad, but here's the deal. At the time, I don't do it as much anymore. Go to the flea market, getting up 6:15, 6:30, week after week, while you have sometimes a beautiful woman... in the bed next to you, I know you're crazy, and then leaving that to get up and go to a swap meet, walk around in the heat, you're not doing it to pay market value for shit. You're just not. Otherwise, don't get out of bed, sleep an extra 3 hours, and enjoy your weekend.
Yeah.
You want a deal. Not just a marginal deal, you want a significant deal. You want a jackpot. That's what happens. People go out to flea markets or swap meets to find jackpots. That's why they go to garage sales. That's why they profit off people's, I hate to say it, people die, there's an estate sale. I know a guy who found a lot of gold at an estate sale, or it was a bag of like costume jewelry for $50. There was real gold in there. They made like $1,000 off it. This is how it works.
Yep.
Otherwise, stay home, go on eBay, go to a store and pay that fair market value.
And if you're in the nature of buying and selling, it's hard to feel bad because... So, I mean, I got copies of Caltron 6-in-1 and Action 52 for really cheap. Now, I bought a lot... I got them for cheaper than I should have. I got them for $10 complete, and even in 99, that's a steal. But the guy I bought them from, I'd been buying shitloads of stuff from. He had made thousands of dollars off me at this point. And so I got them for a deal. And you know what happened? 10 years later, I decided I didn't need them anymore. And I sold them off. And you know what? That person got a deal. Because 2 years later, the price of them rose again. Like, especially the Action 52, the price goes up. You can't... Especially when you're looking at a larger timeline, you can't really feel bad about it because... I don't feel bad that I made $150 on my Action 52 and now it's going for $300. I don't. That's how it goes.
You sold me the Caltron, Ian.
Yeah, I know I sold you the Caltron, and at the time I gave you a fair price for it. It's not my fault they found sealed ones 6 months later.
It didn't really go up. That's okay. You know, I still love you. I'm disappointed you never found the manual for it, though. That's all. Use the manual.
And as far as just, like, I want to make sure we cover this. Have you bought something for so long? Because I don't know exactly what they're targeting. As far as buybacks at the store, sometimes that has happened, yes. We always try to give, like, really good prices on the buybacks, but... Especially these days with how fast video game prices fluctuate, something that was like $30 2 months ago could be $60, and I might have paid the guy the price I would have given him for the 30. And then I'm verifying prices, and I'm like, well, fuck, I could have paid that guy an extra 10. But I mean, that's just how it goes.
We got to play with that night vision. It's fucking incredible, by the way. I haven't sold it. I'm keeping it.
Oh, I know.
Makes you feel slightly better. Slightly less scummy. All right. At Tom J. Wan, what is Ian's worst experience he's had with an employee? Ever caught one buying games off people out back? Well, you wouldn't have to out back. It'd be funny out back. Hey, meet you out back. Give him the signal in the way. Yeah. Out back.
Yep, real easy. We had an employee who'd been there for 2 months. He was a regular employee. Really nice guy. Seemed like a really nice guy. He'd been there for as long... I mean, he'd been shopping there for almost as long as I'd been working. We hired him, and his first couple days, he seemed okay. But we realized within about a month that things weren't going so well. And he had kind of told me that he had an opiates problem. He was taking painkillers. He was taking too many painkillers. He had legitimate back problems. He was taking way too many. Long story short, the guy had no attention span really whatsoever, and was doing inventory the one day, and pulled out a drawer of games and put them on the counter, and walked away from them, and someone walked off with 200 loose PlayStation 2 games.
I'm sorry, Ian. I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't. So we ended up losing... at that point, it wasn't like they were the most valuable things in the world, but we lost probably about a fifth of our PlayStation 2 collection because one employee...
So the guy just took a bunch of discs?
Basically, we have the drawers, right? We sleeve all of our discs, put them in alphabetical order, yeah. Cases go up front. And he was, we were redoing the inventory, recounting the numbers, and he had pulled the drawer out and put it on the counter and walked away, and I wasn't there that day, and someone walked up, grabbed the drawer, and walked out the door with it.
What did you do with all those empty cases? You sell them bulk on eBay, or you still have them somewhere?
We pulled them and probably sold them, or,
You probably kept the good ones?
In general, that's what we do if we find empty cases. If it's, something good and someone comes in with, a loose, San Andreas.
So was he gone for that?
Oh, he was immediately shit-canned. He was on his way out, but...
Oh, he was anyway? Or was it,
Because he was just... He literally was not getting any work done properly. Everything was fucked up. All the receipts were fucked up. And, like I said, nice enough guy, but had some serious problems on his own. And as soon as you cost us money like that, you're out the door.
Is he going to watch this podcast?
I don't know. Nice enough guy. I'm not going to name him. But, yeah, I mean...
Because you don't like talking about other experiences in the store anymore, so I don't know if you're
one. Yeah, I'm getting to the point where I'm really kind of clamping down on that.
Well, much to the chagrin of the audience. At Dave Van Damme Net, there he is.
All right.
Has Ian ever had a clueless seller who has something incredibly rare, valuable, and didn't even know it at his store? Let me think about that one.
Yes, we get that a lot. The reason I kind of wanted to take the question, though, is... we get people who come in every once in a while with NES games or Super Nintendo games, and, I'll get a guy who comes in, and, it's like a moment on a TV store. Guy's like, just moving, need money for beer and pizza, so my friends, I give stuff to my friends for helping me move, and he's like, so I got this box of Super Nintendo games, and just turns out, apparently the guy loved RPGs back in the day. I'm like, I can give you $140 for all this, and he goes, oh, fucking A, and I go, yep, absolutely, and, they're very, very happy. But what it happens the most is with these weird, not weird, but I always refer to them as kind of more like boutique or niche, systems. The Sega Saturn, the Sega Dreamcast, stuff like that where a lot of these games shot up in price. People come in all the time with Saturn collections, and I give them a quote, and they go, really?
They didn't realize people want the games.
Right. They'll come in with something like a Stall, or a Burning Rangers, and they just have no idea what's on their hands. And I'll be like, I can offer you this. And they go, whoa. And then before they think I'm trying to pull one over on them, because obviously if there's money in there, they know that I'm selling it for more. I'll be like, yeah, look, okay, this is probably 100. This is probably 150. This is what I'm offering you. This is what I'm offering you. But the thing is they're so surprised by it most of the time. And it's obvious that they haven't paid attention to this stuff, and they just want it gone. And it's like I've said before, when you sell stuff to me, I'm not ripping you off if you agree. You enter into this contract. They're just happy to find out that it was worth anything. And, I'll say, you can put this on eBay and get $150 for it, and they're like, no, we're happy with the price. And, that's it. So that happens a lot with, Dreamcast. Like I said, Saturn is a system that it happens with. a ton, where there's just all these gems peppered in this huge stack of sports bullshit. So
if you had actually seen and noticed the NWC cart in that bag, what...
Oh, I've said it all the time. If I had seen the people ask it all the time. If I had known the NWC cart was in the bag, I would have handed it back to the dude and been like, I don't know where you got this, but this is worth a couple grand. Because at that point in time, it was worth, well, a few grand.
At the point, it was worth what I spent? It was worth like $4,000 at the time.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, you know, I mean, no, and people can doubt me all they want, but I do it all the time with rare games that are worth a couple hundred bucks, and I would do it there too, because really, at that point, it's like, not only am I just doing it because I want to be a good person, but then it's like, does this person know something that I don't know? Are they putting me on point? And it's like, what do you offer?
You don't have the cash to give them.
Well, we would. I mean,
you have to call the owner around to come down and give them someone $3,000 or whatever, $2,000.
I've got a checkbook that we can write from. Yeah. But still.
Limited credit.
It's the matter of coming up with an ideal number on the spot. So I would have just been like, look, you can auction this off, and you can sit pretty for a few months. But still, like I said, I've never anything that expensive has come back in again. But more often than not, they just want to know, well, that's great, but what will you offer me?
Sure.
Because, like I said, they're moving or they're doing something else, and they just don't care. They're like, look, $300 in my hand for this box
right
of
now.
Games right now
it's
is, free, worth
it's
more
found
than,
money.
Is worth more than $600 a month from
it's
now.
It's found money.
Yeah.
I don't care about this stuff. A lot of times, if you don't care about it, whatever you get is fine.
Yep, exactly.
At Jester of Roanoke, Virginia? I don't know. You have to ask him that. Will game developers ever stop making peripherals like Wii, Fit, Kinect, etc.? Why or why not?
Not as long as people think that new shiny toys are going to continue to be fun for them. I mean, with the amount of Guitar Hero stuff and DDR pads, but I mean, that's different. That's a game type, but you know, we joke, and I've joked with other online with other people online who own stores. We all have Wii Fit board graveyards.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have piles and piles of these fucking things. But why? Because people buy them, and they will continue to buy them. And I see a little bit of a backlash against it, in so much that like. The Kinect, Microsoft tried to push the Kinect, and now last E3 they didn't even mention the Kinect at all. You know, and they're selling
it. They saw one without it, the Xbox One without it.
But especially because you have to realize that there are still kids in this video game equation. You are still going to see weird, stupid little doodads like Tony Hawk ride on skateboards that supposedly go along with the game, and you know,
or get your Wiimote tennis racket accessory.
Yeah,
you know how many dollar stores you go in that have that shit, those molded cheap pieces of plastic that's literally our controller holders from the... How many companies made a ton of money off of the Wii just by having shitty plastic molds made that look like tennis rackets or baseball bats?
Yeah.
You know.
So, I mean, right now, though, I mean, if you look at where we're at with the Xbox One and the PS4, going forward, assuming that Microsoft doesn't try to revive the Kinect, we're looking at a generation of basically what I would call standard, good old-fashioned, traditional video game playing. And I love the Wii U. Other people don't call the gamepad a gimmick or whatever. But the truth of the matter is very few games require anything of that gamepad.
It ain't a gimmick, though, because you can use it to play the games on it as a portable, basically. So it's not,
What I'm saying. There's only a couple of games that I can think of that are really good that you cannot do the off-TV play. Splatoon would be one of them. The gamepad is too essential to it. But, you know, I mean, even the Wii is a plop down on your ass and play the fucking game sort of system without a lot of crazy peripherals. But I would not be surprised if we start seeing some wild horseshit roll out again in the future.
Kind of shocked that there has been a Wii U sort of thing like the Wii Fit come out.
There is a Wii Fit for the Wii U. Wii Fit U, it uses the old board.
Oh, but I mean, nothing new though. I mean, nothing like a new piece of shit you gotta buy.
No, you can use the old one. I mean, that was one of the cool things
Were they still making Wii Fit boards for the Wii U?
So like the remotes, the nunchucks, and the boards all just got repackaged.
You know what? You know what? Fuck everyone on the internet for not giving Nintendo enough credit for doing that.
Oh, I thought that was fantastic.
No one give Nintendo credit. The only freaking console in the past 15 fucking years, Wii and Wii U, that can use the old controller on it in some way.
I bought a Mario Kart 8 bundle and did not have to buy anything else to get four people playing on my TV that night.
Shame on you, internet, for not giving Nintendo at least credit for that. Oh, Nintendo sucks? Yeah, at least they're not having you buy $200 worth of controllers for your new system. Charge you $60 for a controller. Just use the one you had before.
Yeah.
And you're fine. Damn it.
At Burnesque. Did you ever... I like this question. Did you ever believe wrestling was real? If so, what era? Does all that you know now kind of mar it? I liked how he explained the word mar for us.
I want to say the only time I kind of thought it was real was... It was still real to me. The only time I saw wrestling live as a kid was at the Meadowlands show. I must have been 6, maybe early 7-ish. And Hogan... I remember the main event because it was... bullshit main event house show thing where Adrian Adonis comes out with Jimmy Hart. Hogan comes out, clears the ring of him, poses. It wasn't even a fucking match. It was like a 2-minute thing, and that was it. And the crowd goes, "I'm happy," but it was bullshit because it wasn't a real match.
Right?
You know, it was like, "Oh, Hogan's like, oh, I gotta," you know, the crowd. But at that point, I'm like, "Oh, this is," you know, you don't know what to think when you're 5 or 6. It's like Santa Claus,
right?
It's all magic. It's not to say you think it's real. It's an otherworldly experience.
Sure.
Does that make sense? It's like any other TV show. You kind of know the TV show is not real, but you get wrapped up in it. You know, so it's hard for me to say when I stopped thinking wrestling was real, whether it was a gradual thing. With me and Santa Claus, I think I was always smart enough as a kid to kind of know Santa Claus was bullshit. I hate to say it. Even though I was like 4 or 5, I was like, it's a little fishy, this whole thing. My parents didn't do a great job of hiding it because I kept the freaking Bradley's label and Kmart labels on my G.I. Joe toys. So they weren't even trying.
Yo, the elves were overworked that year, dude.
The elves made my G.I. Joe Tomahawk a vehicle for me. Thank you.
Out of birch wood.
Yeah, exactly.
And can-do attitude.
But it's hard for me to pinpoint when wrestling, when I kind of realized that this is kind of weird to see a prison guard beating up on a male model basically in the ring and not getting in trouble for it, and then beating up, you know, his man. I don't know. I think it was this gradual sort of, oh, this is kind of showy, so it's a show. I don't know.
So you're just a couple years older than me, so my answer is slightly different. I don't think, and it's not because I was a smart child, it was just a matter of timing and my parents, but I never really believed wrestling was real. Or I should put, I always knew that it was supposed to be fake. You know, my parents, I mean, one of the first times I remember watching wrestling, I remember my dad walking out, and he sees me watching it, I'm kind of like enthralled. And he doesn't tell me I can't watch it, but he's like, you know, son, I just want you to know that, you know, that's not real. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we were of the age where basically it was at that point, If the big interviews and stuff hadn't come out, we were very close to the point where
you would have figured out.
Where the world knew that just 100% without question, like, it was admitted that wrestling was fake.
Well, by the late 80s, they started say that. Because these guys would go on talk shows like Arsenio
Hall.
Right,
that's what I remember. That's what I'm referring to.
And they couldn't
to.
Get away with it anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to. So you know, my dad's like, you know, this isn't real. I'm like, okay. And, I mean, you know, your dad tells you it's not real, and you look at it, and all of a sudden you start to see all the missed hits and stuff like that. But I remember, there's two things. One, I do remember when Shawn Michaels threw...
Marty Jannetty
threw the window. And
in barbershop.
Yep. And something in me was like, oh my God. You know, and it was that, it's not that I knew, thought it was real, but I don't know if I was reacting to it like a TV show, but then the fact that it's not quite a TV show, there was this weird moment there for me where I was like, oh, that's fucked up. Like, and then I had to keep telling myself as a kid, but this isn't real.
But you were too young to sort of separate
in
your mind.
But I'm like, this is convincing, sort of, in a way. But it wasn't ever the in-ring action that... I guess what it is it was never the in-ring action that I thought was real, but I always kind of felt like the stuff on the outside was always a work, or a shoot, when in reality it was just a work. So, but the thing was, is it was funny, though. So my friends and I, we watched it, and we all knew that wrestling was fake, but we took it to the opposite extreme. Instead of the person who's like, it's still real to me, you know, and no, look at this... My friends and I took it to, like, the opposite extreme. Like, the wrestlers' muscles were fake. Like, they were getting, like, implants put in and stuff like that.
Wow.
You know, there's no way that this guy, you know, Hulk Hogan's muscles aren't really that big. You know, it's like an inflatable, like, you know, prosthetic or whatever. So, I mean, we went way off the deep end in another way. Like, it's not only...
But you still watch, though.
Not only, yeah, but not only is it fake, but
that's fake.
It's really, really, really fake.
That, they're not really crowd the first 10 rows. That's like...
Yeah, I mean...
They're cardboard. Right. You went over the top.
We had conspiracy theories about how fake wrestling was.
There's nitrate in the turnbuckle. It's all about that. You guys shouldn't make fun of that. It's serious.
I mean, that's serious. All right.
But, okay, does all you know now kind of mart?
No.
No, because now you look at it as performance art versus versus thinking it's real.
Well, even as part of being a kid, I mean, once we finally wrapped our heads around this, you still watched it because you were watching these insane, larger-than-life personalities.
Yeah, it's a superhero show. It's a superhero show.
It's a TV show. It's the argument I have with, we have with people all the time. It's just a fucking TV show.
Yes.
Real or fake, it does not matter.
It's a TV show about a wrestling organization.
Yes,
it
is a shitty drama.
It's a shitty soap opera.
It's amusing.
It's a shitty soap opera with oiled-up men.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Thank you.
Darn tootin'. So, no, it doesn't mar it.
My favorite name, at that ass is my boss. Now that you've both dabbled in nonfiction for the NES book, I've done more than dabble, is there a chance of either of you writing fictional stories?
I used to actually write all the time. Short fiction was my favorite thing to write, and it was one of my favorite ways to pass my time from the time I was probably 16 until probably the time I was 23 and I moved out here and I stopped writing entirely because I fell off of it. I enjoyed it. I felt like I was fairly decent. I also enjoy writing nonfiction. Will I ever go back to trying to write something, though? I mean, I've actually wanted to... ever since my nonfiction commitments to the book are done, I've kind of wanted to do something more creative and just write something, but I don't know that I'd write anything long. I'm not talking novella length. I would write maybe a couple short stories again and work myself back into it. Writing was definitely a passion.
the Pattanine short story compendium.
Yeah. We can do that. Writing was a passion of mine, and I would like it to become a passion of mine again. I just, right now, my head's not there.
Gotta finish the book. God damn it, we gotta finish the book. I will want to write fiction again. The book's been on and off for 2.5 years now, believe it or not. And I don't know if I want to do something like this again. I've actually joked with Frank about we want to write, if he knows how to type, we would do it. We want to write a book that compares all the movies that came out at the same time about the same thing.
Yeah.
Say which one was better.
Because
we have 50 on the top of our heads that we can think of. That'd be fun. But no, I think fiction, I've always gravitated towards fiction. That's why I do the NES Punk videos, because I do a fictional wrap around it. Otherwise, doing reviews to me is not too interesting, even though...
I like to read nonfiction. I like to write fiction. What I really like is somewhere in between, like In Cold Blood, where Truman Capote writes a nonfiction book, but...
Historical fiction?
But adds the flair of fiction
So you like Console Wars, because you interviewed a ton of people, then wrote a story
about
it.
Sure, yes.
But no, I want to write fiction, but it's just that if there'd be a market for... You know, the grand adventures of Frank and Pat, you know, take our characters from the videos and put us in a 200-page book. Could be entertaining. Kind of like a Goosebumps series or, you know what I mean, or the Babysitter's Club. But, you know, you throw in, you know, other characters. You have the evil store owner, throw it in there. It could be a fun thing. I don't know if there's a market for it because writing takes time. But the good news is that writing fiction takes a hell of a lot less time than what we just did. You know, I
will never do anything like that again.
I could write a fiction. I could probably write a 200-page book in 6 months, easily, from start to finish, or less.
Towards the end, when I was re-editing some things after you had made the choice to kind of give the reviews more room to breathe, I had more fun with it because I could use more of my language. I didn't have to be so concise with words, and I started to enjoy it a little bit more. But it's still, that's a really restrictive format to write in, and I did not feel like I was writing me for a lot of it.
Well, you weren't.
No, I know.
Because when you write reviews, you come secondary to the content.
Yes, I know, and that's what I'm saying. That sort of style is not something I particularly enjoy.
Well, you had the reflections, though, you could have added.
Well, we did.
Yeah, but that was your chance to shine.
And that part was fun. But, I mean, just these... I would never want to do a guidebook, a series of small, not-connected things again.
Let's do a Turbo one. Come on, it's only like 114 games, 130 games.
No.
94, well, plus 30, it's 134, something like that.
Yeah.
I'll do it myself then. Screw it.
All right. This one, I think this was, well, we can both answer it. From Hogan's Heroes fan.
They're still out there.
Do you find it weird to have quote-unquote fans, and does it add to your anxiety levels? How do you cope?
Okay. It's not weird to have people that are a fan of your work, because that's the reason you put yourself out there to begin with, because you want people to enjoy what you do. So if you don't...
We already come from two different camps, but continue.
Well, then why are we doing this, then, if people, you know, if you think people are enjoying it?
Well, because we started... Continue, I'll finish.
So, does it answer your anxiety levels? No, I have the type of personality where I guess I'm easygoing enough that it doesn't bother me if you hate what I do. If you love it, it's great. But it doesn't make me anxious knowing that someone likes what you do, because again, that's why I do it. You have to have an ego in some small level to put yourself out there in any performance. You have to realize that I know that people want to see me do this. That I'm talented enough that people want to see me do this. So inherently, knowing that you can have fans of your work, that's sort of built in that respect of knowing that. So for me, it's not really an anxiety level. That said, there are fans that are scarier than others. I'll just say that. There are fans that don't know, quote-unquote, how to be fans, don't know where the line is of that. Because you're a fan doesn't mean that we should be hanging out, that or that you should know about my personal life, or that you should be involved in my personal life. So there's that there, too. But as long as that, both sides know there's that sort of line, then it's fine, in theory, to me.
For me, and I think Pat took my quick little comment the wrong way. I did not do this because I needed to develop a fan base. I did it because, quite frankly, I thought sitting down and just shooting the shit in a structured way with Pat would be an amusing way to at least blow a couple of nights until we decided we were doing this more seriously. The fact that I have gained listeners who enjoy my outlook is pretty cool, and it's made the internet a fun place to be. I've met a lot of really nice people. Does it add to my anxiety levels? Yes, 100%. I'm a fairly private person. I mean, I don't do much more besides this podcast on the internet. But it's not a bad anxiety, and I don't want people to think they can't come up and talk to me, because they can, and I enjoy it. It's kind of a good anxiety. It's one of those things that makes me confront my fear of meeting people cold, which is something that you have to do in the real world. It's something that actually helps me when I'm doing interviews for people that we're going to have to hire for the store, things like that. And it's also taught me just, I mean, a lot of you people who have, you know, seen me at conventions and been so nice, you've kind of taught me how to make a friend in any room that I've been in. And I've always been able to do that to a degree, but it's very easy now. Good example. So, you know, Pat, we've talked about it twice now at the start of the show, but I go to the gym now, and I have a trainer. 5 years ago, that would have been a really awkward relationship to get going.
With the trainer?
Yeah, with the trainer. Now, because I'm more comfortable with just talking to people I don't know, because of people I've met at conventions, my trainer and I were hitting it off by the end of the first day. So, yes, it does add to my anxiety levels. I'm not going to lie, at too many games, Saturday was signing and gifts and nice people from all day, from 10 until 7.
Oh, that was a marathon.
And I had to fucking sneak away and have a fucking cry, because my nerves just couldn't handle it anymore.
Okay,
I
didn't know that happened.
Well, now you do. Don't have to tell you everything. But
that would be something you could have told me. Okay,
but yeah,
you're telling the world the same time you're telling me.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, like I'm trying to say, it's not like this. It's this bad thing. I appreciate the hell out of it, but I'm not used to that. That's not what I got into it for. And you know, when you've got all these people being nice to you, and you don't understand why, that will screw up my brain.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's like only Frank, because Frank's the best example, because Frank's so disconnected from this entirely.
Right. Frank is a completely different version of
me
us.
Me and Frank got noticed by the beach. We hung out last Friday.
Right.
Two people came up and said, "Oh, you're Pat and Frank." And Frank is like, and he gets a little weirded out, but But Frank doesn't see any of this.
Right.
Like, this is behind a curtain. So for him, I guess, it makes sense because, you know, he's Rip Van Winkle. You know, he's a man out of time, which is, I guess, part of the charm.
Sure.
But he does understand, though, that people might enjoy what he does because he does see, he gets, like, people at the bars love Ass Frank. Like, people like watch. Sure. Like, people don't watch my stuff, but they know they've heard about Ass Frank, and so they watch it, and they're like, oh, Frank, when's another one coming out? And he's like, what? He has no idea.
Well,
you know?
I'll also point out that, at least for the conventions and going back to the cry thing, I have horrible
sleep.
It
takes a man to admit to crying.
I cry all the time. My sleep has been miserable. The worst it's been in the past 6 months in quite a few years. And when I'm at conventions, I sleep even less. So I'm already an emotional mess at that point because I'm just not fucking sleeping. I'm getting an hour of sleep and then meeting people for 7 hours.
Ian does like to party a little bit during the convention season. Pat's early to bed, early to rise for the most part.
The partying is because I can't sleep, not the other way around.
Self-fulfilling prophecy at that point. If you drink until 5 in the morning.
I'm not always drinking until 5. Sometimes I'm drinking until 4:30 and then sneaking back in until 5.
You see my point. All right. Just it'd be nice to get breakfast with Pat at a convention. That's all. You know,
I'm not paying for a $40 fucking buffet.
It's not a buffet. First of all, the buffets are like $13. Second of all, oh, we did have yogurt from the... We got yogurt and fruit from the...
It's good.
We talk about sometime about our first time we actually spent time together for an elongated period of like 3 days.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, shit. At StarFox_45, did either of you use TSR's NES Archive back in the 1990s and early 2000s when he was still updated? Well, first of all, he wasn't updated in the early 2000s anymore. I don't think. He was done by the 99
or 2000? So the answer is yes. Both Pat and I did.
A big yes.
And I'm sure Pat will get into his experiences with it momentarily.
I'm going to go to his website right now.
So, that was kind of a jump-off point for, I think, a lot of early collectors in 97, 96, 97, 98, because he was one of the first sites that really showcased some of the cool oddities that the Nintendo console had.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a huge factor in what made a lot of us get into collecting, at least back then. I don't know about now, was all the weird stuff. All the stuff that people, you know, stuff like the...
Nintendo Museum section.
Stuff like the Pan-Asian carts and whatnot were not things that were known to everyone at that time. Action 52 was not known to everyone.
Wally Bear and the No-Game.
Yep.
M8. M82 stuff.
It also had a thriving message board community where people did a lot of trades. They did a lot of trades on there. A lot of people were jackasses. A lot of people were friends. I still remember the names of some of the people. But I'm not even going to mention them. It was a wonderful resource when you're learning. People got Mike Etler's list, and people constantly updated and tore it apart. We discovered...
Rarity list.
We discovered, at that point in time, you know, prior to massive internet trades and eBay, what stuff was more common in what regions. And we started to kind of notate rarity lists with regions. You know, it was easier to find here. So, hey, I've got a buddy down here, and it's easier for you to find Bucky O'Hare. You know, find that for me. It was a wonderful place for people to gather. At some point, the message board got out of control, and it got shut down. I don't think it really got shut down for being out of control. I think he had intended to reopen it. I think he did, and it lasted for a little while longer, and it froze. My memories of the message board ending are a bit foggy. He did go on to do stuff afterwards, though. I believe his name is Kevin something or another. I could be wrong. And I think he does a site called Magweasel, which I've read extensively, and it's really good. It's about, like, Japanese gaming magazines and stuff from the retro era. He covers a lot of TurboGrafx and PC Engine stuff.
How did I know about that? We should email him and get him on the show. We should interview him. That'd be great. I was writing the money. January 20th, 2000 was when he left his farewell message, and I kind of remember that. I was kind of sad by that. It's still there. Check it out.
It was before I left high school.
So 15 years we're talking about. It's still there. He's still paying for the hosting fees. AtariHQ.com/TSR. And I thought it was just really just, there was nothing there like it. I mean, obviously it was Internet 1.0, so you're not going to have bells and whistles, but you have pictures of everything. You have, there's a whole piracy cart section. He has a bunch of, I'd say the vast majority of manuals there before stuff like Nintendo Age existed. You had stuff like that. Even in text form, just he had all this compiled in one place.
And I want to point out how important his website was, not only for the reasons we've already said, but like it launched a huge, huge a run of imitation sites that basically tried to document all the weird stuff about Nintendo. And I don't even remember a lot of the names of them now, but one was like Nintendo World and stuff like that.
NES World?
NES World.
That's still around, I think.
And, but a lot of these sites spawned up as to kind of, I guess, pick up the mantle from the TSR's NES archives and carry it on from where he left it. And I don't know. I feel like that site's hugely influential for things like Atari Age and Nintendo Age and,
sure,
you know, all the other very, very collector-focused websites. And, I mean, I haven't looked at it in a while. Maybe I will tonight. But, I mean, it is a fairly modest webpage by today's standards.
Of
course. But the amount of information it offered you back then, I mean, it really made Nintendo seem exciting.
Yeah, I had no idea. Like, if you click on the NES Museum section, you get something about Nintendo World Championships. You get Hot Slots, all three Panesian boxes, Cheetah Men 2, Action 52, a section about Active Enterprises, a bunch of AVE games, Wisdom Tree games, the Hong Kong version of, like, Duck Hunt. I mean, you know, for now you're like, oh, but this is the first time you've ever seen this stuff. This guy compiled it all for you to learn about. I didn't know about the M8 demo unit. The M8 2 I knew about, because I see the M8, I'm like, what?
Yep.
I had no idea that existed, you know, and that came out before, and it's harder to find. There's a section about demo carts and prototypes. Again, this is back in, like, the late 90s he's doing this stuff. So, good on it, TSR. I should email him. And
Guy had passion.
Very cool. Even talking about the Game Genie
adapter
for the top loader, which a lot of people still know exists because it's hard to get. And no, I'm not paying $80 for one at a freaking convention. Maybe 20, I'd buy one. It's time now to unbox stuff. We appreciate your gifts. Thanks, you're so generous.
Yeah, thank
so,
you.
First off, a guy who wants to remain anonymous sent me two boxes, 25, 30 pounds each, like 60 pounds of stuff. He said, I'm not going to go through it all. I'm going to show you a few of them. But he sent me two Odyssey 2 systems, three Stooges, big plush three Stooges. He sent me
a wicked sweet Roger Rabbit.
Like a 14-inch Roger Rabbit bendy in the package still.
Fairly jealous of that one, actually.
Well, we can negotiate, you know. You know, you got some extra PC engine stuff. I can't show everything. There's not enough time. But thank you so much for sending that stuff. It was just a ton of stuff.
Yeah, thank you. He sent me a...
It's right here.
Yeah, it's right here.
He sent Frank something, too.
It's still wrapped up, but he sent me a Superman record read-along book, and those things are awesome. So I'm actually pretty excited about that.
He sent Frank something. And then he also sent me, like, a Game Boy Color in the box. And so at first, you gotta be like, it's nice that he sent me stuff, but I don't know if this stuff he doesn't want anymore, or it's just all, I don't know. But then he sent me Genesis games. I was like, that's nice. You send me Genesis games. Some are uncommon. Some are common. But I got Beauty and the Beast, Loose, Bell's Quest, which you said is uncommon, right?
Somewhat uncommon.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which is like, okay, Sonic 2 is cool. A Batman Returns, looks like a rental-style case. It's like upside down in like half the case. Batman Returns, which is a good port. The very good Tengen Miss Pac-Man, which is great.
Best version.
In the NES. I reviewed that in the NES guidebook.
I know you did.
You're going to expect more of this next 4 months. Because Street Fighter 2, Champion, pretty good version. Mortal Kombat, which is going up and sort of people want this version, as far as I saw.
Do they?
But this is where I'm like, okay, he's just sending me his extra Genesis games. Then he sends me box, no manual, but Ranger X.
Yeah, that's not a common game.
Not a common game.
Nope.
You would say even rare.
I would definitely say rare.
So thank you so much, because
that's a really cool gift.
Even though I don't know that much about Genesis, when I saw Ranger X, I'm like, I know that's one of those, you know, 10 to 20 Genesis games that everyone wants that you can't find.
Yep.
So thank you very much. Wish I could say who you are. These next two, this is from a Frank crate. Frank has now, like, a huge pile in his living room. I said, Frank, can't open it till Christmas, basically. You can't open it till the Frank Loot Crate videos. But this is John Carling sent us these along with the Loot Crate. So
all right.
We'll open them at the same time.
Here we go.
Nice little envelope here. Whoa.
John Carling, thank you.
What was it first? Pat wins. Ian wins. Oh, there's a note. My name is John Carling. I'm an independent artist from Oakland, California. I wanted to send you some of my work to share.
Oh.
And a thank you for all the entertainment you continue to provide on a constant basis. It is always a treat to have something new from you. Looking forward to your new book. Cheers with a cute little rabbit. P.S. If you're ever in Oakland, come visit my studio. Oh, look at that.
He says I have good taste.
Look at the back of the note. Look how, did he doodle that? That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Nice little doodle.
I love stuff like this. Like, so it looks like there's a bunch of sketchbooks and stuff in here.
I'm not too familiar with this sort of genre here, but the drawing's really, really well done. It's almost like 1910s sort of style drawing, almost.
Oh, shit, dude. This
like
is
old style? Like, it's really sweet.
This is really cool.
Show the camera.
Cool.
Get in front of the camera there. Look at this sweet... that one. I'll show you that one. Yeah.
No, I love sketchbooks, like especially black and white sketchbooks, and this stuff is super.
This reminds me of
a
pop-up book I had in the library as a kid, which was sort of dark because like all the people got murdered in it, but it was still in the kids section. I'll never forget that. I got to find that book.
Well, thank you for this fantastic care
package.
No,
this is great.
I'm going to flip through all of this tonight.
I won't give away, but now it makes more sense. Now I saw some of the Frank Crate stuff that he sent. This is a lot of stuff I got to go through. Thank you so much. Wish I had a website here, John, for you. And I got this little... What is it? Did you get one of these?
Yeah. A Lewis versus... I love
what
mini,
is it?
It's probably a mini comic.
Oh. It's not a mini comic.
And I love mini comics. This is fantastic. People can send me art and reading material all day long.
All right, moving on. This is from... I think it's from Germany. This is Mark CU Podcast. It's a mask of my favorite band. Well, the leader of the band, Freddie Mercury. The voice of the band, I should say. They're still trying to tour without him. Freddie Mercury. That is hysterical.
That is wonderful.
Well, now I know I'm being for Halloween.
Freddie Mercury.
I got to get the nice jacket and then just the white
yes.
cutoff shirt. And this is from Josh. Thank you, Josh. That's really, really funny.
That is a perfect gift for you.
I do love Queen.
It's the only band I know him to like, truly.
I like bands. I like music. I'm not tone deaf. This is to both of us. There's one. It's a Blue Crab Magnets. It's a Nintendo cereal magnet.
And it's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cereal magnet. Is
what
it
was?
Is. He said it was a Nintendo cereal magnet.
Oh.
But that's fantastic.
Oh.
I remember, like,
on my head.
That cereal, it was Chex with marshmallows, right?
For the most part.
Yes, it was Chex with marshmallows. That's awesome.
Really cool. All right. I don't know if he sells them or not, but cool. Thank you.
Fight over that one.
This is from our buddy Kelly Moon.
Oh, Kelly!
Frank stuff, like, twice.
Kelly is a good dude.
You can read the note.
He sent me Willie Beamish and a custom amiibo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know.
Pat and Ian. Pat, I know you received your first amiibo, but here's your first custom one. You
what?
Got a custom one
what?
Now, too. It took me a few weeks
there
to complete.
There is justice.
Ian, you may have to have a modded PlayStation, but I thought you would enjoy this. Okay.
What?
I will.
What?
I have a Japanese PlayStation, so I
Pat and Fran. Oh, there's a bunch of stuff in here.
I will probably be able to make use of it.
There's an awesome Star Wars gift wrap that I want to be like my grandparents are not ruined, like save the gift wrap. Look at that awesome gift wrap.
That is nice.
All right, let's save. Pat's got a custom amiibo too. Thank you, Kelly. Let's see what this is. Oh, it's a gold Pac-Man.
Oh, wow. He did a really good job on
that's
that.
That's fantastic. I can add it to my regular Pac-Man. Nice,
that's cool.
Nice reseal job too. Can't
he's
really
good
tell.
At that. My Splatoon Mega Man that he made me is still in the box because he put
awesome.
It back together so well.
Right, where's Ian's package in here?
He did really... Damn, he's good.
Ian, that's for you. All
right, I do have a modded PlayStation.
I do too, but it's in the garage, I think. No, it's not. Here's another one. All right.
Kelly! You son of a gun!
Oh, we got a book.
Oh, man! He sent me Tom and Jerry Volume 1 on Blu-ray.
Well, you got...
I love Blu-ray animation.
There might be something there, too.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to watch cartoons and eat so much candy.
Like every other one.
Oh, my God.
What is that?
Oh, he pays attention. Kelly, I feel like...
By the way, some of the best wrapping I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Even on the small ones. I suck at wrapping. I can't even see where the folds are.
Do you know who Antonio Inoki is?
Yes.
Okay. He has a puzzle game for the PlayStation 2. I mentioned it on Twitter in passing months ago, and he got the damn thing.
He has
for
a puzzle
me.
Game?
Yes. So I have it. Oh my god, it's Inoki against Thunder Liger. Look at this. Look at the back. It's like Puzzle Fighter, but with like Japanese wrestlers of
that's
the era.
Liger's there, who's still, Thunder Liger, who's still wrestling somehow.
He's 50 and put on a match that was incredible for NXT 2 weeks ago.
Oh, look how nice. He gave me a $30 Regal pack. Well, I think we have to spend this together. I think we're obligated to go see a movie together, Ian.
That sounds cute.
Thank you, Kelly. I've never been to a movie with Ian, have I? We seen a movie together?
I feel like we have.
I don't know.
Well, thank you, Kelly. I am going to play the shit out of this.
I got one more from Kelly. God, Kelly, you're just knocking out of the park.
Oh,
with...
he did tell me he was sending me these for my birthday, so I appreciate that.
Oh my god!
Thank you.
Okay, you're gonna wanna borrow this from me. It's the Ultimate Superstar Guide.
Oh, that's
but it's all drawn.
That's so cool. I think
Justin Roberts, Justin Gabriel. Well, he's not there. Eve Marie, Eve Torres, they're not there. But this is still cool.
A lot of them aren't there.
Enzo Amore?
I love Enzo Amore.
From Hackensack, is he still wrestling? Is he in NXT?
Yeah.
That's hysterical, because I have a friend named Enzo. Eric Rowan, oh, this is great. Take a look at this. That's fantastic.
I think Vonnie was actually telling me about this. I think they got it at the comic shop. Oh, man, the Junkyard Dog looks awesome.
Oh, it has older ones, too?
Yeah.
John Laurinaitis.
Erwin R. Scheister is in here.
That's fantastic. Let's move on.
I'm putting it down because I won't stop.
I can read it later. Oh, we're like halfway done. Wow, this would be like a 20-minute video. Oh, Jesus Christ. We can fight over this. Who gets what in here? This is from... There's no name. It's from an online retailer. Oh, there's a gift note. Okay. From Monty Singleton. See You Podcast is my latest addiction. Thanks so much for the great show. Also love video game years. Thanks. From Insert Coin Toys, PS. Ninja Turtle cereal on the way. What? Well, we always talk about how much we love these.
Yeah!
So
I love little cereal packs.
I like Cheerios. Lucky Charms a little bit. So we can divvy that up.
All right. Okay. I want the Cocoa Puffs and the Golden Grahams.
Oh, perfect. Jesus.
This is so crazy.
This is a lot. All right, this is from... Okay, well, let's do this one.
Oh, so he's the guy who sent you the Ninja Turtles magnet. Probably then, too. The Ninja Turtles.
Oh, okay.
That would make sense.
Here's a small one from Prioritaire. Is that France? French? It's like... I don't know. I guess it's French. It's a coaster, I think. Oh, it's from Sweden. Hand-painted coaster all the way from Sweden. Hi, it looks like Ian needs one of these. You do. We'll send you some indie heat scented love to you, Pat, later. From Pierce. P.S. Check out my paintings. Facebook.com/... Oh... Slaska fan. S-L-A-S-K-A.
So someone made me a coaster? That's really, really quite cool.
Do you recognize the pattern? Is it from anything?
I don't, but it's still awesome as shit.
Alright, next up is from...
That's so cool.
This is from Chris.
I'm using it right now.
Chris from Lynchburg, Virginia. The official CU podcast coaster. I just need to get one. We got sour straws. Is this a newer thing? Sour straws?
Yeah. Yep. I love them. Well, no, I mean,
do you want to show the coaster? I don't think I showed the coaster.
It's very nice.
I was frank for once, not showing the audience. All right. So we got... Here you go. More ring puffs. Jen got us ring puffs back in the day. I'll take one of these, but I don't need a lot of them. Ian's got the sweet tooth. I have sweet tooth for chocolate. Ian likes more of the sugar candy.
I know. I like chocolate too.
Okay. Well,
my sweet tooth knows no bounds.
Oh my god! These I'll try. These I've had.
Yeah. We're doing it. Yeah.
You doing?
We're
doing
one right now.
Okay. You got
yeah.
it.
Right, Jesus Christ.
We're doing it. We're doing it. We're doing it live. And there's another one of just. We went over this one instead. Just a cola one.
Yep. Let's do it. I love these. Oh my god, wax bottles.
I'll do a cola one.
Alright, I'm gonna do a blue one.
I haven't had these since... I don't remember them being this big.
To your good health, sir.
Do you bite off the top? I forget.
You cheers first and then you bite off the top.
Oh,
and it tastes just like Freezy Pop liquid.
It is Freezy Pop liquid.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if anyone hasn't figured it out by now, the easiest way to get me to act like a complete total idiot on camera is to give me candy that I haven't had in a while.
I wish I didn't lose like my sweet tooth a little bit for stuff like this, but that's good.
That was fun.
Yeah, hold on to that too. All right. We ain't done. Let's put the wax bottle here. I thought these were smaller as a kid.
Nah, this is...
We were just smaller.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, this is from... Did I say it was from? Oh, I did. Oh, this is all from Chris still. Remag. He's at BLH _ Productions. Pac-Man for the Pac-Man and the Inkling for the Little Bitch. Little Bitch? Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Fuck the haters. And I look forward to future videos and blog posts. Stay fresh. He's Remag Gamer, so he made you bead art of a squid.
Ah!
That's going to be... you're going to put that for the podcast.
Ah! So fucking cool.
And I got Pac-Man. I do like other characters. I do appreciate it, but everyone's giving me Pac-Man stuff. I love it. It's Pac-Man.
And a squid.
And what is... I cannot make out what that is. Let's see if you can solve that one. And more sour straws.
# CUPODCAST.
Oh, it's the hashtag.
# CUPODCAST.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
And more. Did we just get these?
For
sour straws.
So you get a bag of them.
Are yours multi-flavored too?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to trade. I don't know if this is multi-flavored. We'll figure it out.
I will take the non-multi-flavored if it's that big of a deal.
Okay, we're not done yet.
Okay.
Man, you guys. And he's starting to work out too. All the sugar.
I know. It'll be a slower going.
Did we pre-open this one up?
I tried.
I'm going to use brute strength.
But when we say pre-open, we try to cut them all so that we don't have to spend all that time on camera, but I don't look at these.
Okay.
Body parts?
Almost. A bunch of Game Boy Advance cases. There's a bunch in here. Empty cases. Empty UMD case? Is that
a
UMD?
Yeah, that's a UMD case.
There's a UMD game, Untold Legends. You familiar with that?
Nope. I don't have a PSP.
All right.
You're the collector. You can collect the stuff that I can't use.
Oh, remember Pissed on PC?
Yes.
It made fun of Myst. It was a parody of Myst.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Leader Suit Larry Love for sale, the CD version.
Oh, nice. That's super cool.
That's really cool. That's a great game. There's a nice hottie with a Jersey accent in that game, I remember. More empty cases. I'm trying to look around the empty cases here. See what else is in here. Dragon Ball Z pin. Here's a wipey for a camera. Or a screen. That could be
That is a, that's a DS wipe.
Oh, are they? Okay, well, thanks.
You can use it for anything.
We'll dig through the rest later here. There's some other stuff in here, but... There's something. Is this special here?
I scored with Leisure Suit Larry.
What is this? Oh, there's a card. Okay, I gotta read that.
Some Game Boy Advance games, Powerpuff Girls, and Naruto.
I always
like the Powerpuff
Girls. I think
Girls.
It's a card. All right. Hi, I love your CU podcast show. As for reviews, the first thing I saw of yours was a Russian Attack review. Wow, going back to 2009. I loved how it made me see a game I hadn't played since childhood in a new way. I never before had made the connection of Russian Attack and Russian Attack. Or the ridiculous logic of enemies just running straight at you. As for the little gifts in the box, you can share as you see fit. My only request is that Ian picks one of these games for Ian's happy handheld reviews. I think it might go back to me because I don't know if Ian's doing that.
Presumptuous.
I think it should be a thing. We all do. And he has a cute little from Natalie. Thanks, Natalie. I didn't see a name on here.
That's awesome.
Natalie from good old Atlanta.
Atlanta?
Nice southern gal.
Well, thank you. That's a good, cute drawing.
A lot of thought and effort went into this.
I kind
of
want to play this.
Look at the wrap. There's a Star Wars wrap on the outside. What is it, Ian?
It's two boxes of peaches and cream oatmeal.
Four boxes of peaches and cream oatmeal.
And a giant 30 individual boxes of cereal.
Wow, so thanks a lot. Is there a note for who's from?
I'm looking.
Oh, let's see. What's on there? Let me go see.
Apple Jacks, Corn Pops, Mini Wheats, Rice Krispies, Fruit Loops, and Frosted Flakes.
We're going to have to divvy that up somehow. That's the ones when we were kids. We had the packs.
Yep.
Thank you. Wow, I didn't know they made them like that anymore. I guess they do for like summer
from,
camp or school.
It's from Monty again. Monty Singleton. See you podcast, my latest addiction. Thanks so much.
Oh, God.
That's awesome.
Well, you can have the oatmeal is all you if you want the oatmeal.
I'll eat.
You like oatmeal?
I do like oatmeal.
I'll try one. Well, not into Peach that much.
Peaches and Cream is my favorite. I don't know how Monty knew that. Monty, that's terrifying.
Maybe you mentioned it.
Maybe I did. I mentioned a lot of things that I don't remember mentioning.
Last but not least, this is from my super patron, from my Patreon. It's going to drop it and hit the Mario. This is from Christian out in Germany, Deutschland. We're going to start with the... Now, I don't know if it's even arguable that these are, like, the best gummy bears on the
100%.
Planet.
100%. Haribo makes the best.
Haribo,
ever.
Which is right in his neighborhood, you know?
That's awesome.
You see commercials on TV sometimes. So, these are gummy worms. What, are those the actual bears?
These are the bears, and these are the actual German ones, so the flavors are actually different than they are
in
the US.
Are they not all imported? Some are imported?
No, there's like a U.S. flavor, and then there's the
But even but the quality's off the charts on these. We're talking soft and chewy. So we'll have to share all he's going for. We're sharing these. All right. We got more foodstuffs. This made it through customs. And I will try this. Curry Gurwurst Ketchup from Deli Cat.
I want curry ketchup.
And then, it's funny because they're in, like, toothpaste tubes. Which mm-hmm. I wish our ketchup was in toothpaste tubes. Right Wob Tomi Ketchup and Mayo. That's in English. All in one, all in one. That's from Nestle.
That's awesome.
As long as it's, see if I can smell it. Can't smell it because it's closed. We're going to try this at a barbecue. We'll try this.
The curry ketchup is what's most interesting.
I think it's just spiced in there. It's mm-hmm. just... Even probably their ketchup. We probably put too much sugar and shit in our ketchup. It's probably better. Bras Bonbons. What? Ooh, these look good. These look like sticks of something or other.
Oh, man. These are like big Pez.
Are they really?
Yeah.
They're not like chocolate?
No. These are big Pez.
Musil. It's like oatmeal.
Yeah, I know it is. It's so good. You put it like a little like Greek yogurt on top of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or put this in Greek yogurt and mix it? Oh, we'll just divvy this out.
Eat the crap out of that shit. It's so good.
Is it like just like grains and nuts?
It's kind of like a granola, but not like formed. And then, yeah, you usually do it with like a little bit of cream or honey or yogurt.
Oh, I like Greek yogurt.
Yeah, it's super good.
Thank you for the German musel. All right, now we have like individual ones. Here's one for you.
Yay, thank you.
There's another one for you.
Okay.
Surprise pack from Germany.
Oh, no, Ian. Okay, you do yours.
Dear Pat and Ian, it's very inspiring to see you two talk boldly on the podcast like a shining beacon of authenticity in the sea of the internet. You are my number one source of fun and insight from the gaming world. You've been entertaining me for years, and now I want to give you some entertainment back. Not only with the German food, but my hilarious game, Pixel Heroes Bite and Magic. I sent you the code.
Yes.
It would honor me remarkably if you played my game and gave me feedback. This means the world to me. I'm the programmer and our three-person team, and all our passion went into making the game as seen in the 80s styles making up trailer. I hope this game will tickle Ian's grinding nerve, since it is old-school, hard, and features permadeath.
Yes!
I challenge you to beat it. Shout out to Frank. Watching Ask Frank is a healing for my soul. I would have sent German beer if import law didn't prohibit that. Please put some into the next Frank crate for my Patreon money. Oh, I will do that. Keep up the amazing work, Christian. Important. The curry ketchup and ketchup mayo combo must be refrigerated after opening. Okay. That's the same here, too.
The game is in English, too. Play it directly with the CD or use the Steam key included in the box.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so he gave us...
So, okay.
This is cool. Okay, my note is the same.
And there's pictures of... They did a funny video, like, promoting it, and it's like, look at it, it's like 80s style. Did you get the same one? They're dressed like it's like 1984. It's great. Oh, Christian's a great guy. He's in the chats with me, the Patreon chats.
I like the greetings from Germany picture with, like, the
you know what?
Plug.
Germany makes it in my top 10 places I want to visit in the world. It makes it in there.
I've always wanted to go to a May Day in Germany.
Oh, we got Topps Hero Attacks cards. Not too familiar with them. I'm guessing they're, like, you know, like a magic sort of thing, but it's Topps Hero cards.
Maybe, and it doesn't really matter because opening cards is always incredibly fun.
Oh, thank you so much. You are the man. One of the only few PAL exclusive games that I ever wanted, and he got it for me. He got me Noah's Ark.
Nice!
This is the Konami title, which is actually very, very fun. This is awesome. Actung on the back.
Oh my god, I can't remember which one this is. I should know the name. He got me a Mahjong game I don't have for the PC Engine.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sengoku Mahjong. That's it. He's got it right on the back. Thanks.
That is awesome.
It takes a very special person to send me a Mahjong game for the PC Engine that I don't have already.
Noah's Ark. You know, I almost bought that at Con Bravo. I'm glad I didn't.
What? Noah's Ark?
Noah's Ark. I almost bought a bunch.
It's really cool.
It's his game, but it's like a cool like CDI or 3DO sort of package on the slipcase.
Yeah, he did a physical release.
Bang up job! And they signed it. Look how awesome that is. The graphic style is actually really cool. Did you get one of these?
I think so.
That's probably it. Awesome job.
That's what I got.
Awesome job. Go check out Pixel Heroes Bite and Magic.
Oh, this looks right up my alley.
Well, we're through it. This room's a mess. All right, we got to end this podcast sometime, fortunately. Thank you so much for everything.
Yeah, thanks.
If you want to send us more stuff, and then I got to rent a storage unit. It's CU Podcast, care of Pat Contry, P.O. Box 7695, San Diego, California, 92167. So much candy, so much goodness. Thank you for the Noah's Ark and everything
else. Thanks, everybody.
We have a Patreon, patreon.com/pixelsickhole. If you like us, feel free to give us a buck or two.
I think it's so cool that indie games get like physical releases.
No, it's fantastic. We're going to see you in a couple weeks. I'm going to be at Retropalooza in Arlington, Texas, September 26th, 27th. And then Ian and I will both be in Portland Retro Gaming Expo, October 17th and 18th, which is the 30th anniversary of the NES. That's Sunday. And by then, hopefully, pre-orders for the books will begin, or for my book. And that's it. So, for Ian Ferguson, it's been a pretty howdy-doody long CU podcast because of that unboxing.
Yeah.
And we'll see you in a couple weeks as we go have more wax bottled syrupy
nickel nips.
All right. Nips?
Nickel nips.
There are nips?
Nickel nips.
We're going to go suck on a nip. All right, we'll see you later.
All right, bye.